We've got Christopher Everard and Max Egan on the line with us. I want to go to Max Egan first. And Max, you know, first of all, how are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I've got an echo.
Coming back.
Okay.
Coming back.
Okay, yeah, if you can keep going, then we can resolve that as you're talking.
Okay, yeah, well, I'm good. It's been a really hectic week, actually. I didn't get to bed until like 4 o'clock last night. Things are very, very bad in Gaza City at the moment. Gaza City has had no electricity since last night. There is absolutely no safe place to go at all. These people can't even run to the hills because they've got a 50-foot wall around them and an ocean on the other side. The water pumps in Gaza aren't working now due to lack of electricity. The hospital's been bombed. They've got no water. They've got no hospital. The people in Gaza believe that the ground incursion is going to last much, much longer than what Israel is telling people. And, you know, although the Israeli forces are being met with a strong resistance from the civilians that they're attacking, the civilians only have rocks and stones. And so food supplies have run out for many people, even the more well-off families. The disturbing part about it is the designer spin surrounding this. While this is happening, you know, people are screaming out, yeah, yeah, go kill the terrorists, you know. And people really need to get a grasp on what's going on here. Gaza Strip is a civilian population of refugees. There are no military targets in Gaza Strip. Everything that they're telling you is a lie. I've been there. I've seen with these people. I've eaten food with these people. Gaza Strip is a civilian population. What's happening here is that they're bringing 60,000 troops have entered Gaza Strip. This is making Operation Cast Lead look like a Sunday picnic. They're using experimental weaponry. They're using dime ammunition, which basically they shoot it into a room. It explodes in the middle of the room and it cuts everybody in the room in half, but doesn't damage the furniture. You'll notice there's photographs coming out of children cut in half in the streets. This is from dime ammunition. They're using white phosphorus bombs over residential areas. This indiscriminately kills, like, everybody. White phosphorus burns you, sucks all the moisture out of your body. It's a banned chemical weapon. They use these in Castle. They're telling you they're not targeting civilians. And yet the spin we've seen is that we've actually seen 4 children being machine gunned by a fighter jet on the beach. And we had some Zionist scumbag, some barefaced liar there talking to Wolf Blitzer saying, no, this is Hamas butchering their own people. And the people buy it. Oh, yes. He said, what's happening here is Hamas is carrying out acts of mass genocide against the people of Gaza rather than give up. So they're promoting this and they're saying this. They're spinning it this way, which gives the ability for the Israeli terrorists, which is what they are. This is 60,000 Israeli terrorists have gone into this refugee camp. And they are conducting wholesale slaughter against the people of Gaza, and they're saying that it is Hamas killing their own people. Most of Hamas are already dead. They've just dropped 400 tons of bombs on Gaza Strip, for Christ's sake. Now they're going in there with tanks and everything. I was speaking to people in there. I've had six of my friends die so far. 3 people cut in half by dime ammunition, three girls, 3 guys, one a 10-year-old girl, a 23-year-old girl, a 22-year-old girl, 24-year-old guy, 55-year-old man, and a 27-year-old man. These are all dead. These are friends of mine. These are normal people going about their lives in Gaza, going to university. My friend Omar, when I spoke to him last night, he was still okay, but he was cowering in fear. He was hiding in his room. As a tank was driving through the house next door, they're just destroying all the buildings. They're just driving tanks through all the buildings. You know, this is a refugee population. This is civilians. They brought in 60,000 troops with tanks. They're just driving over everything, using banned chemical weapons, testing all of their new weapons on the Gazans the way they do. It was several hours ago when I last spoke to him. I have 3 other friends in Gaza. A young lady called Mace, a man called Nadal, and a guy called Mo. I haven't had any news of them for the last 3 days. I think my other friend Hani managed to escape and is safe somewhere in Europe. What's going on here is genocide, and the world is cheering it on. People don't realize what we're seeing here. This is like the new 9/11. They'll get to go in and carry out genocide against 1.8 million people, 900,000 of whom are children. They'll do it on television while the world watches on, and the world will cheer them on, and they'll get away with it. And the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. If they can do this, if they can get away with this, the way they're setting it up, then they can get away with anything, and it's game over if we don't do something. You've seen in France, the terrorist prime minister of France, what's his name? That psychopath, Manuel Valls. He's obviously a terrorist. He's a psychopath. He's a criminal because he's just banned all Palestinian protests, thereby openly declaring France to be a country that openly and wholesalely supports ethnic cleansing. That's what that statement says. So Manuel Valls, if you're listening to this, go fuck yourself. You're a terrorist. Okay? I have to say that because it's true. That's what we're seeing here, folks. We are seeing an open slather to wipe out any population you want to. Now, I've been to Gaza Strip. I snuck in through tunnels. I entered that country illegally. I ran around with a video camera. They could have shot me as a spy. They arrested me. They interrogated me at the border. They gave me tea and bickies, and they provided me a driver to get me back to Cairo safely. These people are not terrorists. But what we're seeing here is brutal disregard for life. We're seeing out-of-control terrorist governments that are inflicting absolutely anything they want to on the people. And if you fight back, if you dare to raise an eye against anything they do, you're a terrorist. And the people of the world are just going along with it because they're brainwashed by the television. That's what we're seeing here. People don't realize the seriousness of this situation. If we don't do something about this, then why Palestine will be the way of the world? And I am organizing, I'm trying to organize a delegation. If you're an activist out there, if you're anybody out there and you care about the world and you care about what is happening, come with me now to Gaza Strip. Come with me. Let us go and save these beautiful people. These are a shining light, these people. They are so strong, and the resilience they've shown is incredible. And they are being exterminated while the world cheers them on. It's the sickest thing I've ever seen, Chris. And I'm a mess. I'm a mess. I'm supposed to go and do a series of European speaking engagements, and I can't even prepare for them because I can't get this out of my mind. The other night I was sleeping. I actually got 6 hours sleep. It was the most solid sleep I've had in a week. And I woke up. I woke up like a shot hit me. At 5 a.m. in the morning, and I went straight online and I looked, and they started the ground invasion 3 minutes ago. I'm like, it's like I'm connected to it, you know, and I can feel the terror of these people, and my friend to be there cowering in a room, there's nowhere for these people to go. They can't run to the hills. They can't go to the ocean. They've got no weapons. They've got homemade bullets and pipes that fighting against tanks and 60,000 soldiers into a refugee camp? What the fuck is the world doing? What is happening to us? This is ridiculous, folks. This is genocide. It is ethnic cleansing. It is not acceptable. Wake up, you people out there. Wake up to what is happening, please. I don't know. Chris can say something because I need to recover. I'm sorry.
I know what you're going through, brother. And I can't say it exactly, but I can feel it as well. I'm also...
My friends are dying. My friends, these innocent people have just been cut in half with experimental ammunition. Cuts them in half so clean it hardly even leaves any blood. Very tidy way to kill people. Oh, yeah, we don't target civilians. We're going in to save them. Hamas is butchering their own people. You fucking liars, I tell you. Benjamin Netanyahu and this whole terrorist Israeli government, the world's got to stand up and do something about this. This is the worst war crime in modern history. And they get away with it because they wear their goddamn Holocaust like a badge on their sleeve. We are the Holocaust, which enables us to go out and exterminate anybody who gets in our way. That's what they do. And if you want to complain about it, well, we've got the Samson option. And what is the Samson option? Google it, folks. Samson option. Israel has openly stated on at least 3 occasions that if their existence is ever threatened, they'll implement the Samson option. They have missiles trained on every major city on the planet, and they said if you want to take us down, we will take down the world. And what does that statement say? What does it really say? It says we're going to do anything we want to do to anybody we want to do it to. And if anybody chooses to get in our way, we're going to consider you are anti-Semitic and that you're trying to bring down Israel, and so we're going to destroy the world. So what it says is that everybody in the world is going to do everything we want to do. You're all going to do it our way, and if you don't like it, we're going to destroy the world. That's what the Samson option says. People need to pay attention to what is going on here, because if they don't, the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And now is the opportunity we have to fix it. So let's step up to the plate.
I agree with Max, and it's absolutely disgusting what's going on, not just what's going on in Palestine, but what's going on around the world, and the support that Israel has, the blind support. Israel can do no wrong. Israel's God's chosen people. This has to happen for Jesus Christ to come back. I mean, it is disgusting. We're talking about, as you said, 1.8 million people in a 25 by 5 mile area with nowhere to run, surrounded by three walls and an ocean. No supplies, no resources. And the people here in the United States, at least, the ones that I've been interacting with, are so blind and dumb to this situation that they really think the Palestinians are nothing but terrorists. And so they support and they rally. You know, let me go to Chris Everard for a moment. Chris, how are you doing?
You hear me?
Yes, you're coming through now. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. I've been listening to the entire broadcast, and, you know, I spoke to Kev Baker as well about the Israeli situation a couple of weeks ago. You know, from a historical point of view, what we're seeing is a continuation of the psychopathic genocide policies that have been coming out of Buckingham Palace for the part of more than 1,000 years. It is genocide. Max is absolutely correct. We are seeing the slow motion genocide of an entire race of people, and it's no different to the policies which have been followed by people like Prince Carl Edward Coburg, who was Queen Victoria's grandson. He actually engineered the First World War, and just a few years after that, they engineered the Second World War. These people are on a psychopathic rampage, and they are turning the entire planet into a genocidal prison, and they intend to incinerate the entire planet. And I know that sounds sensationalist, but if you look at the history of the British royal family, you can see that they themselves say that they are descended from King Solomon and the House of David. The British royal family are themselves at the pinnacle control point of what we call the modern state of Israel. And Netanyahu, Ben-Gurion, Moshe Dayan, all of these Israeli leaders in the last few 50, 60 years, they have all been taking their orders from Buckingham Palace. And the state of Israel that we have right now is a result of the Balfour Treaty, or the Balfour Declaration, and that is a deal that was cut between Her Majesty's government and Baron Rothschild. And it's been going on now for many, many hundreds of years. In actual fact, it's been going on for just over 1,000 years, believe it or not. It first began as the Kingdom of Jerusalem, and that was established basically as a pact between French and British aristocrats. And they went over and they actually killed babies. They had mass genocide, and this was perpetrated using Gentile armies. These were basically Catholics. It was funded partly by the Vatican, partly by the French aristocracy, and partly by the British aristocracy. They established the Kingdom of Jerusalem, which was an occupational kingdom right in the heartland of the Holy Lands, right in the heartland of the Muslim nations that were led by Saladin. And Saladin was the king of the Muslims, and he was the target of these rabbis who did a deal with the Knights Templar all those years ago in Europe. And so the modern state of Israel that we see now is actually controlled from Europe, and mostly it's actually controlled from London.
Max, let me ask you this. Very well said, Chris, first of all. Max, let me ask you this. How did this current conflict I mean, I know this has been an ongoing conflict for a while, and Chris really, I mean, got to the root of it, in my opinion. But how did this current conflict happen, and where do you think it's going to wind up?
Well, it happened with the fervor that was whipped up with the three teenagers that were kidnapped in West Bank. You know, that was the excuse they used to sort of whip up the tension. But it was so planned. It was so orchestrated. I mean, apparently there was an article that was written in the paper about what would happen if three youths were kidnapped, what the response would be. And not only that, but when the youths were kidnapped and killed, they knew about it the very day that it happened, where they spent 10 days whipping up racial tension, and then they went and started bombing Gaza. They blamed it on Hamas, even though there's no proof that it was Hamas, and they went and started bombing Gaza. It's got nothing to do with Gaza Strip, you know? They just thought, oh, we'll blame Hamas, and this gives us the excuse we need. And this 10 days of racial fervor that they ripped up around these three deaths was incredible. I had some friends who were actually in West Bank. There was a friend of mine and a girl that I used to know who were in West Bank about 3 weeks before that happened. And they were amazed at the type of apartheid that they saw. They didn't believe. Like, she knew that it was kind of that way, but her husband didn't know that it was quite as bad as it was. And when he got back to Australia, when they both got back to Australia, he ended up writing a letter to the Prime Minister saying, why are we giving aid to Israel? Because it's an apartheid state, because of what he saw while he was there. But 3 weeks before those three youths went missing, people may not know this, but I have friends who were there who told me about it. I believe they may have even seen it. There were three Palestinian youths, three Palestinian teenagers, machine gunned at an Israeli checkpoint for no reason at all, and it didn't even make the news. Now, where was the racial fervor whipped up over that? Did Palestine spend 10 days whipping up fervor and get the world's approval to start bombing Israel for that event? No, they didn't. But then, straight after those Palestinian youths were machine gunned at the checkpoint, there's an article in a magazine or a paper in the Hasbara or something like that, or the Haaretz or whatever it's called, about the chief of security talking about what the response would be from Israel if three of their youths got kidnapped and killed. And then 3 weeks later, three youths get kidnapped and killed. They spent 10 days whipping up racial fervor. And this happened in Hebron, which is in the West Bank, miles and miles away from Gaza Strip. And as a response to those three youths getting killed, they start bombing the hell out of Gaza Strip. And then, of course, they turn the tables and say, oh, no, we're not doing it because of the 3 years. We're doing it because Hamas won't stop sending rockets our way. But, I mean, that's, of course, saying, look, they're defending themselves. They're defending themselves, so they're terrorists. So we have to send 60,000 troops in there. There is absolutely no reason, no excuse for sending 60,000 troops into Gaza Strip. Well, they've got 40,000 troops on the border, and they called up 20,000 reserves to go in there, and they've got lines of tanks they're taking in there. This is a civilian population in a city. They've already destroyed the water system. Nobody's got any food. They've got no water. They've got walls around them, people. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. They've been blocked off, and they've had sanctions against them for years. Where are they getting all these weapons from that they're supposed to be sending? What is this Zionist prick that was saying that, oh, they're massacring their own children the other day, trying to make excuses for the machine gunning of the children on the beach when he was talking to Wolf Blitzer, who's a Zionist mouthpiece himself and wouldn't push the issue at all. This prick, what did he say? He said, oh, I can't even remember it. I've lost my train of thought, but, mate, what we've seen here is it's genocide. It's pure genocide. There's no reason to be sending 60,000 troops into the Gaza Strip. There's absolutely no reason for it. You know?
Right.
But they're even saying things like they're all terrorists. He said, look, when you go to a Palestinian house, you see the kitchen, then you see the bedroom, then you see the lounge room, then you see the missile room. You what? You see the missile room? That's right. He said, look, when we gave Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians, they said they'd turn it into the Singapore of the Middle East, but they didn't. They spent billions of dollars on rockets. What? When you gave it back to the Gazans, you put a wall around it, you put sanctions on them, and if they're spending billions of dollars on rockets, billions of dollars, well, on these little pipes that won't even hit Tel Aviv, and they put a hole in your roof when they come down, these are billion-dollar armaments, are they? You know, and the people just buy it. People just go, oh, look, yes, look, they're spending billions on rockets. That's how they come. They get to spend thousands of rockets over there, you know. It's ridiculous, you know. What are they fighting against? Why would they be fighting the Israelis all the time? Let's see. You know, the Israelis have imprisoned 800,000 Palestinians since 1967. Do you know there's over 5,000 Palestinians in jail right now that are held there without any charge or trial, just picked up at the checkpoint, picked up at a border for no reason whatsoever, and just taken away, thrown into solitary confinement and left there just to terrorize their families. And the Israelis hate the Palestinians with a fervor. They treat them worse than dogs. You know, they go into Gaza Strip with the aim of killing as many of these people as they can get away with. They love it. They absolutely love it. They think Palestinians are cockroaches who should be exterminated. That is the attitude. Regardless of all the rhetoric they tell you, regardless of all the hasbara that they employ to go and post pro-Jewish propaganda all over the internet, and go and look it up, folks. Go and look up hasbara. The Israeli government literally employs and pays students to go out and all the social media just saturated with pro-Israeli propaganda, to go at anybody questioning Gaza Strip, to go out there and just attack them. Keep them tied up, fighting with you online on these chat threads rather than acting, rather than going to their government, rather than going to Gaza and helping people themselves. Keep them arguing amongst each other on chat threads with all this Israeli propaganda. And they've got books of it. They've got libraries of how to do this stuff. They've convinced themselves that Palestine never existed. And all the new Jews that come up, all the new Israelis that come up through the education system, anybody who's under 60 actually believes that there was never, ever a country called Palestine. And they've got a whole library of Jewish propaganda to back it up, that they can argue with you about it all day, and they thoroughly believe it. That's the point. They're not lying. They believe it with every single fiber of their being, because they've been trained to believe that it's true. That's what we're up against. It's incredible. It's like a brick wall of programming, even trying to get through to these people. But this is a really important time. It really is. We've got to pay attention to what's happening in Palestine. We have the opportunity to fix this. We really do. But we have to pay attention to what is happening. This is really, really serious, folks. This is taking things to a whole new level. The propaganda surrounding this event is absolutely phenomenal. And if they get away with this, then they're coming for you.
It really is disgusting, Max. Chris, you know, in the notes that you sent over, you pointed at something very interesting, and that's that Hamas doesn't actually exist.
That's right.
Rather, they're a Mossad and MI6 creation, and they're ultimately controlled by them as well.
Well, that's right. That's right. Isn't that, Chris? You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a book, it was published 3 years ago, called The History of the British Intelligence Services. It's a very well-researched book. It's nearly 1,000 pages long. What it shows is that every week in London, there are meetings between the Mossad spy chiefs and the heads of MI5 and the heads of MI6. And this is also spoken about by Peter Wright, who published a book called Spy Catcher. And this guy was the former assistant director of MI5. And all of these spy chiefs, and you can also, you know, say this about the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA as well, their bosses are actually promoting the state of Israel because they are actually Jewish people. Good example would be J. Edgar Hoover. He was Jewish. He was a 33rd degree Freemason, head of the FBI. And through this book, The History of the British Intelligence Services, you can see that a huge number of these spy chiefs are all Jewish. And if you were to ever even start your own Palestinian support group or something like that, I can tell you now, it would very soon be infiltrated by Mossad spies. This is one of their main jobs, which they do. And a huge amount of money is spent on it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's absolutely right with all that. And when you look at what caused them to put the barrier around Gaza to begin with was the Islamic Jihad guys that went in there. And they're all Egyptian. They're an Egyptian offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, which, again, is an Israeli-sponsored event. It's an Israeli thing. The whole Arab Spring and the whole Muslim Brotherhood, this wasn't Islam. Egypt's got an Islamic government and now they're throwing them out. No, the whole thing was an Israeli operation designed to destabilize the entire Arab world. The Muslim Brotherhood is a totally controlled thing. And so are the Islamic jihadists that are in Gaza. And if you look at Hamas, of course Hamas is created and controlled by Israel. I mean, why do you think they're sending rockets over to Israel all the time? And they won't ceasefire, which gives the Israeli government the excuse to come in and carry out genocide. And why the hell do you think none of the rockets reach Tel Aviv? You know? I mean, they're not going to hurt anybody. They're not interested in hurting anybody. They just want to be an annoyance, and they want the world to make everybody think that the Palestinians, that, you know, all the Gazans are all terrorists and we have to go and wipe them out. It's a setup.
Mm. Well, those rockets, there's photographs of them which are published on Facebook a few days ago. The most popular design is called the Qassam rocket. It's literally like a large homemade firework.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are not professionally built weapons by any shape or form. They don't actually have any trigonometry or, you know, aiming technology at all. They launched from these little metal tripods which fold up and go in the back of a car.
Yeah.
And they're made from metal drain pipes.
Yeah, and they come down and put a hole in your roof. That's it. Mm. They kill you if they hit you on the head, but that's it. And most of them aren't even powerful enough to reach Tel Aviv. So,
yeah.
You've got 5 million Israelis cowering in bunkers to escape from the Hamas rockets, he said the other day.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's ridiculous. They're like, oh, we were scared. So that means we have to go and bomb their hospitals now.
They respond with 500-pound bombs in residential areas and take out 18 family members in one go. And then they drop 400 tons of depleted uranium on the place and rockets. Yeah. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. 60,000 troops with tanks. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, the depleted uranium, of course, is actually plutonium. And I know this because I've followed the development of the Israeli atomic program since the days of Robert Oppenheimer, who was, of course, a Jewish scientist who was the manager, along with the Pentagon, of the development of the first nuclear bombs. And if you look at what they named that first bomb, Trinity, you know, it's full of, you know, it's overloaded with kind of weird biblical kind of terminology. All of the scientists that actually unlocked the power of the atom were Jewish. And, of course, Albert Einstein actually even sent a letter to the American administration, to the presidential's office, saying, look, you're going to have to be very careful, but I do know that if we unlock the power of the atom, we're going to have a bomb which is going to be more powerful than any weapon that's ever been in the hands of mankind. Now, all of this nuclear Cold War arms race that we've seen that went all the way through from the end of the Second World War and kept people living in fear all over Europe and also all over America and Canada, I suppose, all of that stems from basically an Israeli nuclear scientific development program. And now the modern state of Israel has 60 intercontinental ballistic missiles. 60. There are very few nations with as many nuclear weapons as Israel.
Yeah, well, this is for the Samson option. See, this is these Khazars, you know. And it's interesting what you were saying before. When you really look at what happened way back with the Ottoman Empire and the whole thing, when the Muslims came through and everyone converted and all this sort of stuff, you know, you'd find that the actual people, I mean, everyone converted when they came through and said, let's convert, because, you know, the Muslims sort of, All you did was not pay tax and stay alive, basically, if you converted, so everyone converted, you know. But when you look at the actual people that existed there in the Holy Land of Israel, who probably were the ones who were referred to as God's chosen, yeah, they were probably in Palestine right now. Because the ones that are down there now are the European Khazars. That's all. And mm-hmm. The Khazars are very, very smart people. These are really intelligent people. Like Einstein was a Khazar. All these guys are Khazars. And I've got a Jewish friend here, and I told him the whole story. And he's going, oh, I don't know about this. I don't know about this, you know. And they've got another Jewish friend who came up to stay. And he mentioned it to him and said, hey, Max is saying this stuff about the Khazars. And this Jewish guy said, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a Khazar. My whole family knows it. We've been keeping the real knowledge alive because we don't agree with what Israel's doing. He said, yeah, we're of the Khazar mm-hmm. in line, but we're not like them. Oh, no, don't associate with them. But, yeah, we're white. We come from Europe, and we know that we're not proper Jews. But we kept the knowledge alive. So a lot of them do know. But all of these guys are Khazars, and you'll find that in Israel, the actual Semitic Jews are the poor people, and they're treated as bad as the Palestinians. They don't want to know about the Semitic mm-hmm. Jews.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And if you're trying to speak out against the Khazars and this Zionist sort of arrangement that's going on in Israel, you get called anti-Semitic. And these guys aren't even Semites. I mean, it's a brilliant plan. You got to admit. And if you can't do it anyway because they wear the Holocaust like a badge on their sleeve. So it's a great setup, isn't it? You know.
And that's hilarious. They try to act like
something else. I want to add to this though. This is a theory that I've got going at the moment. I can't prove it yet, but I reckon that Chris might be able to look into it, or someone could. But if you really look at it, if you look at Hitler's army and you look at what happened in World War II. There were 100,000 Khazar Jews on Hitler's army, and there were 10 Jewish generals and one Jewish field marshal. And I would suggest these are the guys who manufactured the Holocaust against the actual Semitic Jews that were in the area.
Oh, absolutely.
And what probably didn't have anything to do with even Hitler. You know, he probably didn't even know what was going on. You know, Khazars that did it just so they could set up Israel or steal Palestine, you know.
Yeah. Well, there is a notorious book which I can recommend. I haven't actually read all of it, but it's called 51 Documents Which Prove a Zionist Collaboration with Hitler. That's the name of the book. 51 Documents Which Prove a Zionist Collaboration with Hitler. It is amazing that, you know, these people would actually oversee and manage the destruction of their own kind. In order to actually bolster their geopolitical influence over the entire planet. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolute psychopaths. There's also the transfer agreement, which I recommend people read, which is the story of how there were 60,000 Khazar Jews that were transferred out of Germany in 1933 by Adolf Hitler and sent down to Palestine because England didn't honour the Balfour Declaration, so they basically put all those economic sanctions on Germany around the early 1930s, and they started crippling Germany's economy again. And so Hitler backed him into a corner. He said, okay, I give in. Just give us our economy back. Just get out and give us our economy. So he got 60,000 German Jews. He loaded them onto trains, and he sent them down to Palestine, and he gave them $100 million. And they set up the basic foundation for what is modern-day Israel with money that they got from the Hitler's government, basically. That formed the basis of Israel. You know, people need to look at this. This is all very, very well documented. There's a book called The Transfer Agreement written by Edwin Black. He is a Jewish scholar. This isn't an anti-Semite. This is a guy who found the paperwork and he put it out there. He said, oh my God, we need to tell the people what's going on. And he put it out there. I recommend
I think we should say, Max, for the benefit of the listeners, is that Heinrich Himmler and Hitler were not actually totally in control of what we call the Master Race or the Third Reich or whatever you want to call Nazism. Heinrich Himmler was called Heinrich because his father named him after Prince Heinrich of Bavaria. And it was the Bavarian sovereign houses. These are the royals, and they are the same family as the Saxe-Coburg royals that are today calling themselves the Windsors. It is those royal families of Bavaria and Britain that actually funded Hitler and Heinrich Himmler. Hitler and Himmler were just basically managers.
Yeah.
Hitler was hired, and he was trained by a Jewish guy called Hanussen. And this Jewish guy was a magician. He was a stage psychic, and he had a lot of experience about propaganda. He knew how to do hand gestures. He knew how to deliver speeches. He knew about facial expressions, which actually get the crowd and the audience all, you know, kind of hotted up about what you're saying. And this Jewish guy was Hitler's mentor. History as it is said and history as it is presented on the mainstream media is not as it seems. You only have to look under the blanket just a little bit and you start to realize, hang on a minute, this is weird. There's something else going on here.
Well, and you can see the parallels all the way up until now when you see that Israel forcibly sterilized black women that lived in Israel just for the reason that they were black. I mean, that it doesn't get more eugenics than that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, also, I have to say that it's not just the Palestinians that have been targeted in the entire area. There is in addition to the Balfour Treaty or the Balfour Declaration, there's also the Sykes-Picot Agreement. Now, this was done by a guy called Mark Sykes and a French diplomat called Picot. Now, I should say to people that France, I'm talking about the modern nation of France, has been under the influence and under the control of Franco-Hungarian politicians who are Jewish. A good example would be Nicolas Sarkozy, and he worked for George Soros, who is Hungarian and Jewish.
Oh, wow.
And the Sykes-Picot Agreement is another international treaty. This is on top of the Balfour Declaration. As soon as that was discussed, the Arab population, I'm not talking about just in Israel, I'm talking about in Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, the entire geopolitical area experienced an Arab revolt in 1916 as soon as this text was read out. And in addition to the genocide against the Palestinians, what we're also seeing, and it's never, ever mentioned on the media, is we're also seeing the Bedouin nation. Now, this is a nation that has no actual recognized national map borders, but the Bedouins are an ancient people. They stretch right the way across North Africa. These people have been persecuted, and there's not a peep, nothing on the media about these Bedouin people. They've been herded out of their lands. They're nomadic people. They follow paths of goat and sheep markets all the way through all the deserts of North Africa. They've had nothing but hell given to them.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of...
This genocide goes way beyond even the borders of modern Israel.
Yeah, there's a lot of Bedouins in Gaza, actually. I saw a lot of Bedouins while I was there. I met actually a beautiful Bedouin woman, probably the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. It was a Bedouin Arab woman that I met there. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely shocking what we're seeing here. It really is. Now, but I think it's really important that because of the smokescreen that has been created around this whole issue, the smokescreen of anti-Semitism around this whole issue, and when we there are a lot of good Jews in Israel that are very much against what the Jewish government is doing, the Israeli government is doing. There are a lot of very downtrodden Semitic Jews in Israel as well. I think it's very, very important when we're talking about this sort of stuff that we make the distinction of Khazar Jews and Jews, because the people who are doing this are Khazars. Because even we're saying before, okay, he's Jewish. Well, he's a Khazar Jew. It's the Khazars that are doing this. This is the Zionist mechanism. See, the Khazars they infiltrated Judaism, and they also infiltrated Christianity. This is how you have Christians who aren't Jews, but they're Zionists because they're Khazars. You know what I'm saying? They infiltrated everything. So this is how they merged Christianity and Judaism. See, when you look at the monotheistic religions, you look at Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, you find that Judaism and Islam actually have an awful lot in common. And if any two religions were going to unite, it would be those two. So why did Judaism and Christianism unite? Because they're polar opposites to each other. I mean, Jews think Christians are idiots. They don't think Christ is the Son of God. He's just a prophet. You know, so it's a completely different belief system, and yet these two have united against the Muslim world. It's a setup.
It's been constructed by the Khazars.
Well, I'm just saying it is. I think it's very important when we're dealing with this issue to make the distinction between Khazar Jews and Jews because of the smoke screen. It's because the smoke screen of anti-Semitism. It's such an easy card for the control grid to play. Oh, he's an anti-Semite. No, I'm not an anti-Semite because I'm not referring to a Semitic Jew. I'm referring to a Khazar Jew, and these are not Semites. The Palestinians are Semites, on the other hand. They come from, they're Semitic people. So who's I would suggest that the Khazar Jew government of Israel is perhaps the most anti-Semitic organization on the face of the planet because of what it's done to the Jewish people and what it's doing to the state of Israel, because the actions of this government will bring about the implosion of the state of Israel, because it's revealing itself to the world.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. There's ordinary, everyday kind of Israeli people who go to work in the mornings, and they pick up the newspaper and turn on the TV. And like, for example, this recent wall, this kind of Israeli Berlin Wall, which was built, it actually damaged property prices in all of the areas where the wall was built. And there's ordinary Israeli people looking at the TV thinking, what is going on? I mean, obviously, they want to see a state of Israel. Obviously, they've been brought up to be patriotic and, you know, they've had national service there. And a lot of people have actually served in the Israeli armed forces and they've been brainwashed. I mean, propaganda brainwashing and this drip feed of propaganda, which we see through the mainstream media, plays a big role. Having said that, we do actually see people like Norman Finkelstein and other Jewish people actually saying, what is going on? And they are embarrassed by the policies of the Israeli government. But I have to say, like I said at the beginning of the show, a lot of these policies are not being formulated within the borders of Israel. They are being formulated by people that have dual citizenship. They are dual citizens of America and Israel, or they're dual citizens of the British aristocracy and Israel. And a lot of those policies are being formulated outside the borders of Israel.
Do either of y'all see any kind of connection between Mossad and CIA and MI6? Just kind
of. Absolutely.
Is this a trick question?
Under the auspices of being a dual citizen and just being a regular Joe Schmo, you're actually a CIA agent.
Yeah.
The role of Mossad, Cherie, basically, I mean, obviously they've been involved in a lot of intelligence operations over the years. Their central main role is offering assassination services to the CIA. Many CIA operations that require assassination of certain targets either use MI5 and MI6, and if they don't have any assassins available from British military intelligence, the first port of call after going to MI5 and MI6 is Mossad. And this is well known. There are many, many, many books written about the history of the intelligence services. Chapman Pincher is a good author who's written about this kind of thing. There is a book also called The Man Who Was M, and this is about Maxwell Knight, who was the former boss of Her Majesty's Intelligence Services. That's Maxwell is M in the Bond movies. And, you know, you read these books about these people, and Mossad is nothing more than an assassination agency. End of story.
You know, for those of us that have relatives who really, really love Israel, I mean, really love Israel, how can we get these people to understand that it's not that we hate Israel or that we hate God's chosen people because we're not Christians? It has nothing to do with any of that. And how do we convince them how evil Israel really is being, and especially the really conservative Christian, you know, people that are more neoconservative than conservative?
Well, I would suggest that, you know, letting people know about the true history of certain influential factions behind the scenes is a good stepping stone for people to actually get a geopolitical, you know, handle on what is happening, what they see on the BBC, which I have to say is absolutely disgusting, mind control propaganda. And one of the good things that I would always recommend to people is go online and research Baron Rothschild. He was the very first Jewish lord who sat in the House of Lords at the Palace of Westminster in London. As soon as this guy got power, he was actually doing deals with the, you know, the British government ministers, his fellow ministers, and other members of the House of Lords, and he was pushing through this agenda, which basically came from a guy called Herzl. Herzl is more or less the godfather of what we call Zionism, a political idea, if you like, to actually create this state of Israel. And this is a continuation, as I said at the beginning of the show, of what was going on 1,000 or more years ago. It's going back to the 11th and 12th centuries when the Knights Templar, the so-called Crusaders, were psychopaths. They were French and British aristocrats that were given money by the Vatican, and they went over on these so-called Crusades, and they killed and murdered men, women, and children, and established the Kingdom of Jerusalem. And basically, you know, what people need to do is they need to just look at the history of the Rothschild family, and they need to look at Baron Rothschild, and they need to actually just trace it back. It's all there, all the paper trail, all the documents that lead to this present genocide, which we have right now, they're all there. You know, it's all there. There's books weighing down the shelves in libraries that really show you exactly who the perpetrators are of this political kind of plan, which we generally now call Zionism, but there's a kind of French version of it as well, believe it or not. I mean, the whole of modern France, as I said before, is actually the French people are actually Jewish. They don't know it. They're dispossessed Jewish people. They're Jewish people that are being taxed and being annihilated economically by Franco-Hungarian Jewish people. I mean, there's huge amounts of infighting within all of these different factions of the Jewish communities worldwide. There's enormous areas of industry, such as diamonds, which is actually, you see, the diamond business is actually influenced by De Beers, and De Beers is linked to Sir Cecil Rhodes, who established his own country in Africa called Rhodesia, and he was Jewish, and De Beers is Jewish, and the diamond business is Jewish, and there's not a single diamond that has ever been extracted from the crust of the earth that hasn't cost enormous amount of ecological damage or even social, social turmoil. There's even been diamond wars. That entire industry is a Hebrew-controlled industry, and it's global. And, you know, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem are one of the biggest trading centers alongside Amsterdam. I mean, I could go on talking about different sectors of industry which are all influenced by people that are interlinked with the Rothschild banking organizations. And earlier, Chris mentioned the World Bank, the IMF. The bosses of the World Bank, Christine Lagarde is currently the head. She's best friends with Baroness Rothschild. Before her, we had this guy called DSK, Khan. His name was actually Khan. He was the guy who had the court case with the maid in the hotel room in Manhattan, and the maid, she alleged that she was sexually abused by the boss of the World Bank. This guy's Jewish as well. The World Bank is Jewish. You know, these things are all interrelated. What we're actually seeing here is an interrelated geopolitical situation, but the BBC and the mainstream media have oversimplified it into a straightforward propaganda war, and they're saying Hamas are terrorists, and so they're being killed.
Wow. I mean,
you know, come on.
Well, and look at what just happened a few days ago. The USA and the EU are in an epic brawl for resources and to save the US dollar from being marginalized and to keep the current elite in power. They're throwing bricks at Israel, the BRICS. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and I forget what the S stands for, but I know it's a big deal.
Yeah, some of those countries that you mentioned there, they are what I call the non-Hebrew influenced economies. The Hebrew influenced economies is really basically the Western world. And, the major kind of sectors of those economies is the media, broadcasting, diamonds. I mean, people underestimate the influence of the diamond market. It's actually, the diamond market is a money laundering industry. It's not really to do with diamonds. People don't understand that. The reason that it's linked to money laundering is that because rather than having, say, 10 Puma sports bags full of hard cash in a dodgy deal, you just walk along, you buy two very tiny diamonds which have got the same value with that cash, you stick those diamonds in your top pocket and get on a plane. That's basically what the diamond industry is. It's actually part and parcel of the black money exchanging industry that goes right the way around the planet. We also then have the intelligence communities. They're all influenced by these Hebrew families. There's even father handed to son hierarchies, family hierarchies within the intelligence communities. And then also, I have to say, the world of politics. Politics is a business. I mean, everyone's woken up to that. lobbying, campaign funds, all this kind of thing. The Hebrew influence on the business, and I call it the business of politics. I don't really differentiate any longer between what corporate business is and what politics is. It is a business, and that is also influenced by, you know, these traditional Hebrew families, again, handing political power from father to son. We saw that just recently with the Bush family. And I have to say that Bush is an old Hebrew family name. People don't realize these things. There are actually online directories showing you all of the old Hebrew family names. Bush is in there. Bush is on that list.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the major politicians in the 28 states of Europe, of the modern European Union, most of the senior politicians are Hebrew. People don't realize it. Nicolas Sarkozy was the former president of France. He's Franco-Hungarian. And then you can go right the way through all of the other 28 nations, and you'll find that usually about half of the cabinets are actually from these Hebrew families who have a tradition of being involved in politics.
Wow. I did not know that.
No, I didn't know that either. I know that the Bush family funded Hitler, and they were funneling money to Hitler through the Union Banking Corporation.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really goes deep. You know,
That's right. I mean, all they were doing, I have to say on that point, they were doing no different to what the European Hebrew aristocratic families were doing. People have the wrong idea about this kind of downtrodden image of a European Jewish family. Yes, there were very, very poor Jewish families in the East End of London, and also in Manchester, and parts of Yorkshire, and also in Liverpool, and also in Ireland. However, people do not understand that from the 1500s onwards, there were aristocrats. There were aristocrats in Europe, and they were from these Hebrew families, and they actually got into positions of being barons, earls, viscounts, dukes, marquesses. Many of the marquesses in France were Jewish, and people just don't realize this. The British royal family trace their roots in the official heraldic documents. They say they are descended from King Solomon of Israel. The queen sits on a stone called the Stone of Jacob. It's been renamed a few times. Now it's sort of known as the Stone of Scone. It's also known as the Stone of Destiny. But it's known as the Stone of Jacob, or the Pillow of Jacob. That comes from Israel, and she sits on it, and it fits inside the throne. And when the crown is placed on her head, it's kept overnight. Before it's placed on her head, in a special room called the Jerusalem Chamber. And they sing hymns saying, "O Israel, our new Israel, our new kingdom," as these monarchs are crowned. And the crowning ceremony is a copy of the coronation ceremony that crowned King Solomon of Israel. And people need to get this right in their minds, because it's never spoken about on the mainstream media. They actually have hymns sung for the royal family that say Britain, I mean Scotland, England, Wales and Northern Ireland, is being sung and is being called the new Israel in these hymns that are being sung for the royal family. People need to get a handle on what is happening. Netanyahu, Ben Gurion, Moshe Dayan, all of those leaders, they all get briefing papers from Mossad, and Mossad are briefed in turn by MI6 in London. It's as simple and as straightforward as that.
Yeah, see, people, if you've got people out there who are Jews and they're devout Jews and they love Israel, they should really, really be concerned about who is in control of Israel, because these people are not Semitic Jews. These are Khazar converts. These are the people who orchestrated World War I, World War II, and all of the damage we've seen before. They've done 9/11. They've done the whole lot. These are the guys who did it, and that's who is in control of Israel at the moment. And if you really love Israel, then you need to take this matter in hand if you're an Israeli citizen. You do, because your country isn't controlled by who you think it is.
Yeah, they definitely look at who they're supporting, and really there's the question of, you know, how can a Christian support the murder of these children? Especially, you know,
the Redeemer complex. This is what Christianity does. It's okay. Christ died for everybody's sins anyway.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder, though, are they following a playbook, a Revelation playbook, where
Revelation is a script. Revelation is a script. It's not a prediction. Right. It's a script.
I completely agree with you. Max, let me ask you this. I don't know if you've looked into this. I'm sure you have. But the significance of, oh, and let me also say that the reason Sheree was asking this, she has family that is very devout Christians. And unfortunately, here in the United States, we run into this mentality frequently
all
where people just blindly, I mean, they blindly follow Israel because of the religion. But the point that I was making is that the term Holocaust, it actually translates to a burnt offering. It was a Greek word for burnt offering, and it was a burnt offering of animals. What's the significance behind that?
Oh, mate, I'm not sure that I'm the right person to ask that question to at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole thing about a burnt offering is obviously burning a sacrificial offering to the gods.
Yes.
And obviously what we saw in ancient Greece, where, you know, like you say, where the word comes from, the kings and queens of Europe used to travel to places like Delphi and Delos. They used to make offerings to the gods, and then they used to go to these special hillsides, these sacred hills. They used to lay down in the grass with their ears over these holes in the ground. And the holes were like little eeny-weeny tunnels that went down into these subterranean caverns. And down in those caverns, there were young girls. And these young girls were never, ever brought out into the open air. They were actually born in these underground caverns. They were brought up in those underground caverns. And they were floating in underground aquifers, really. They're like underground streams or underground lakes. And they were the oracles. And these oracles were living in trance. They were eating hallucinogenic herbs, like laurel, mandrake, belladonna. Sometimes the oracles of the Adriatic Sea were taking Amanita muscaria mushrooms, and they would whisper and mumble information from the spirit world. And the kings and queens and the dukes and the viscounts and these earls from Europe used to travel down to these oracles, and that's where they used to get some of their information. But they couldn't do that unless they made offerings to the gods. And so this whole idea of burning something, you know, I mean, this goes back so far into history. It actually goes back into prehistory. There are caves in Rhodesia, which is now called Zimbabwe, where there is evidence of burnt offerings going back 23,000 BC. This is one of the main kind of activities of humankind.
Yes, I agree.
Offerings to the god, you know, I mean, we see it in today with these modern drone weapons. Her Majesty has just spent billions right in the middle of what was meant to be an economic crisis, billions on a new drone stealth plane called Tanaris. And this is the judge, jury, and executioner all in one package. It's a deathly, it looks like death. It's got a pink pyramid on it. It's a drone plane. It's built by British Aerospace. And Tanaris was a god of the ancient world where people burnt their children as in sacrifices. And that was the god Tanaris. And Her Majesty is naming these drone weapons after these gods. This is all interlinked. If people have stumbled on this broadcast for the first time, we're not talking about conspiracy theories. This is real. This is really going on. They know exactly what they are doing.
Yes. No, I agree. My point of bringing that up is we seem to have a situation here where, and a lot of people have speculated on this, where the one sect of Judaism or Jews actually offered as a burnt offering another sect of Judaism.
Oh, yeah.
During World War II, and that's, of course, the formation of the State of Israel. Now, I can't help but think about Gaddafi's words. And before he died, he made a speech where he pointed the JFK assassination at Israel and saying that JFK was assassinated because he was looking into the Des Moines, if I remember correctly, or Des Moines nuclear power program. And he knew something was going on, and they refused to go over there and inspect it. And the guy who was supposed to inspect it actually stepped down in order to not have to go inspect it. But once he stepped down, that opened the door for assassination against John F. Kennedy. I can't help but
see.
Kennedy was successful in monitoring that plant. If we would have what was it, the Samson agreement or the Samson I don't remember.
Option.
The Samson option. That's what Max said just a minute ago. I can't help but wonder if that would still be the case or if Israel would be in its place right now. But, you know, that Samson option, it really paints a picture as to why the entire world is going along with this genocidal agenda against the entire world. Now, when you start to read their Talmud and you start to read their writings, the writings that they believe in, not the writings of Judaism, not the Torah. I'm talking about the writings that they believe in because they don't believe this stuff that they put out here for the public. We can go into Kabbalah. There's so many different topics to go just to illustrate the point that they don't believe the stuff that that they want you to believe in. But my point is that once you start looking at their own writings and you realize that these people have a God complex and they believe that they are outside of our race, that they are something different, and that the entire world is Goyim who's meant to serve them. And Netanyahu even said, he said, we'll use the West, the British monarchy, and we'll use America until it serves the Zionist, as long as it serves the Zionist agenda, and then we will destroy it. I mean, this is Netanyahu who said this.
You see, it's all the same line, you see. The British line, this is the same line. It's the same ruling line that's always been there. It's the same people. When they say they're going to destroy Britain, it's not the British royal family. It's the same people. You know what I mean? It's all the same people.
Right. And it's disgusting, and people are following along like sheep. Now, let me ask you this, Max. What if we collected as a people and we said, we're not going to put up with this? You know,
that's what Palestine is giving us the opportunity to do, because like I said, this is the big test. This is like the next 9/11, only we're participating in this one. We have an option to participate in it anyway. I only killed 3,000 people on 9/11. They'll kill far more people with this incursion into Gaza when this is over. This will make Castellet look like a Sunday picnic when they get through with the people in Gaza. I just feel it. That's what they're doing. The people in Gaza got no water. They got no food. They're bulldozing all of their houses. Even if they don't kill them all outright, I'll just say, oh, look, okay, we've neutralized the terrorist threat now. We've gone in there and we've bulldozed everything and we've left these people completely destitute. Now we're just going to leave them locked inside this wall and ocean so they can die. That's what is happening. And I'll do it live on TV and everyone will go, kill the terrorist, kill the terrorist. Yeah, they got the terrorist. That's the way it is. Everyone's cheering them on while they're doing it. They're cheering them on.
I've seen people do it.
They've never been there.
Fuckers.
They've never been there. They've never gone there and looked for themselves. I actually, like I said, I crawled through a tunnel to get there. I went in and I just hung out with these people, wandered around, and I met some of the most beautiful people I've ever met. Some of the kindest, most caring, real nice people with bright eyes living in an absolute hell. Really strong, powerful people who just want to live like other people in the world. And they're not allowed to. They're just not letting them. Simply because they won't bow to the government next door, you know. And that's the way it is. If you fight back, you're a terrorist. That's the way it goes. And that's the way it'll be everywhere. If you question the authority of your government, you're a terrorist. That's the way it's going to be. And that's what this is demonstrating. And it's giving us an opportunity to nip that in the bud. That's why I've started this Gaza Shield thing. I really want to create a shield. I want to get every person out there. If you care about anything, if you care about the future, if you've been an activist, if you've been a conspiracy researcher or any of this stuff, here's the new 9/11, folks, and you've got the opportunity to participate. You know, we get 10,000 people, 20,000 people. They send a force of 60,000 people. Surely there's 60,000 people out there in the world who are awake. Let's all go to Gaza Strip. Let's everybody go to Gaza Strip and stop what's happening from happening, you know, because otherwise the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. If they get away with this, they get away with anything, you know. It's time for people to wake up and pay attention and see what's going on here, and that's what I believe. And find out about the Khazars. Find out who this whole line is that's doing this. These aren't real Jews. And even if you are a religious person, if you're a Christian and you believe you've got to support Israel, well, fine, you probably do. But it should be run by the right people. And didn't your Bible tell you about the mysterious synagogue of Satan, which will come to being and pretend that it's the right people? Well, that's what it is. That's what's in control of Israel right now. That's what this Khazar line is. All of the mess that we've seen in the world for the last 200 years, going back to 1,000 years, ever since the Khazar Empire imploded around 1,000 years ago. We've seen this. They've gone out and they've infiltrated everything. And that's what this is. So if you do really care about Israel, well, have a look at who's running it, because it's not who you think it is. And we have an opportunity to fix this, but the world's got to participate. They've got to pay attention. Stop being politically correct. Stop letting people hide behind the mask of anti-Semitism and the Holocaust, because the people that we're dealing with are not the Jews of Israel. There's someone else who is completely different, and we need to pay attention to this. You know, we can fix this, I think, but you know, how do we get through the apathy is the thing. How do we get through the media spin? The media spin around this whole Gaza incursion has been like nothing I've ever seen. That's how I know this is going to be really bad. They're going to really, really push this because they're just getting away with it. Everything, like you said before, everything they're saying about what's happening in there is the opposite of what's actually going on. They're saying we're not targeting civilians. That's all they're targeting is civilians. And yeah, it's absolutely horrendous what's happening there right now as we speak.
Right. 1 in 5 of the victims is a child. And that's not Hamas.
Well, that's the official numbers.
I'm sorry, that's not...
That's the official
that's
numbers.
The official numbers.
We know that. I mean, that's you know, they've been lying about everything else.
Yeah. Well, it's very... it's even difficult to get information now because the Israeli forces are targeting anyone who's got a cell phone on. They're targeting cell phone signals. So it's very, very difficult for anyone to call me or to call any of the people out here. I think Harry Fear's in there somewhere too, isn't he? Was Harry in Gaza Strip while all this was going on? Because I know Harry Fear, the British journalist guy, he's done a lot of stuff on Gaza Strip for mainstream, I think. I think he's actually in Gaza Strip. I've heard that they're targeting Western activists and they're targeting anybody with a mobile phone. So it's very, very difficult to get hold of information at the moment. And I want to find out what's going on with my friend Omar and Nadal and a couple of people, but I'm not going to call them because I don't want them to answer their phone and suddenly it gets targeted by an Israeli rocket, you know. So... But actually, they're not, I don't think there's aerial bombardment happening at the moment. There's too many ground troops in there, but they'd have equipment, electronic equipment. They'd know where there's a phone signal coming from, but they're really desperate to keep any information from getting out of what's actually going on in Gaza Strip, because this just gives them free rein to butcher anybody they want, and they can just say it was Hamas. Oh no, this is Hamas committing mass genocide against the Palestinian people rather than give up. That's the way it's going to be spun to the world. You know, Israel is going to massacre the Gaza Strip. They're going to kill everybody, and they're going to say it was Hamas, and they're going to do it while the world watches on and screams, yes, kill the terrorist. You know, that's what they're going to do. That's what they're trying to get away with. And we need to be aware of this, you know.
Definitely. This is so sad. It's just really sad to me.
It is. These people, they have nowhere to run, Cherie. They have nowhere to run. They've got a wall around. They can't even run to the hills. There's a big wall there. There's an ocean on one side and a wall on the other three. And there's nowhere to run and there's nowhere to hide. There's no bomb shelters. There's no buildings to go and hide in. There's nowhere you can go at all. And it is a human tragedy of epic proportions, a deliberate human tragedy of epic proportions. That's unfolding right before our eyes right now as the world cheers them on, simply because they don't know the real story. They've never been there. They've just been told about these terrible terrorists hiding behind this wall, and they're hoping the world will go and wipe them out so that we all become safe. When really what this is doing is just opening the floodgates for a global genocide. It really is. That's what we're going to see. With French even banning pro-Palestinian protests, I mean, and all the laws we've got coming in all throughout our countries. Didn't Obama with court draw all the helicopters a couple of months ago? All the National Guard have had all their helicopters confiscated in the United States, all 50 states. So they're preparing for something really big, you know. And I think you're right. We are seeing the beginning of World War III very, very subtly. We're seeing it happen right now. But, you know, we can participate in this, folks. We can stop it. We can stop Israel in its tracks. If we
what I'm most confused about, Max, and, you know, I mean, I guess this Samson initiative or however, whatever, I don't know why I can't remember that term that you used, but option, that's it. Yeah, the Samson option. I guess that explains it, but I don't understand how the whole world can just sit back and just watch this. I mean, we're talking about 1.8 million people. This is no joke.
Yeah, 1.8 million people, yeah. Well, the thing is, most of the world, I mean, the social media is being saturated by Hezbollah at the moment. There is so much pro-Israeli propaganda out on social media at the moment. Everybody's going for it. And they're laughing. Fancy all these people claiming that they're defending a place called Palestine that never even existed. Has anybody ever heard of a place called Palestine? All this sort of stuff. Like, there's so much stuff. You can go to the Hezbollah website. And you can actually read they've got a whole bunch of pre-prepared responses for all students, and you actually get paid per response. You get paid for going and doing this. So this is the way a lot of uni students get through college and shit, is they go out there and they just spam the internet with pro-Israeli propaganda. And it keeps a lot of the activists tied up and fighting with them online and stuff. I mean, I'm guilty of it as well. I do post a few things on there, but I try to do it just in such a manner that if someone reads the thread, then they see the responses, and they go, hang on a minute, there's a lot more going on here. So
I do the same thing, Max.
You've got to try to combat their propaganda, but you don't want to get too tied up in it. There's a lot more things we can do. But there is that's the problem, you know. A lot of people just aren't paying attention because all they get is their information from the mainstream media. And if they go out and they search, and there's all these sorts of subtle wordings. Oh, but what can Israel do if Hamas won't stop firing rockets? 1,000 rockets since the beginning of the year. And people think rockets, they go, wow, these are terrible rockets. And then they see rocket damage. They Google it and they see a picture of Gaza from an Israeli rocket. They think that's what the rockets are, you know. So
right.
People just don't know, you know, they just don't know. And they've been trained to think that all Arabs are terrorists. You notice that even with the ISIS stuff that they're showing you, terrorists in Iraq, the new ISIS group. Notice they're wearing Palestinian headcloths. Why would they be wearing the black and white Palestinian cloths on their heads? Because that's what all terrorists wear. If you've got that cloth, you're a terrorist. And why would some Syrian in Iraq be wearing a Palestinian cloth on his head? He's doing it because he's Mossad, and the whole thing's a damn setup, and they want to instill into your mind that Palestinian color is terrorists. All Palestinians are terrorists. That's what Palestine is. It's a den of vipers where terrorists marry terrorist women and give birth to baby terrorists, and they shoot rockets at Israel all day. That's what Palestine is, and that's what they promoted to the world, and people actually believe it. And you go in there and you find the original lines from way back when, and you're very, very correct that the original chosen people are very likely living in Gaza Strip right now. They're beautiful people. They really are.
Well, and the whole thing about this Iron Dome is a scam. It's a total bluff. We have a person who's former IDF come forward and say, yeah, it's all a bluff. Whenever they say that 10 rockets were fired from Gaza, what it really means is one rocket was fired, and so the computer made up nine other rockets, and they're digital. They don't even exist. They're just fake. And then they claim a 90% success rate because they shot down all the fake targets. I mean, all the fake rockets.
Yeah, well, these things are tiny. I mean, you could shoot them down anyway. They're skyrockets. They're skyrockets made in metal shops. I mean, they're skyrockets. You can't. They say, look at all the rockets they're sending over, and they show you a big shelf of rockets. Look, gee, can we get the rockets that you send into Gaza and collect them and put them on a shelf? No, because they blow to smithereens and take entire buildings out with them, and yet these Hamas rockets go over there and they put a hole in the road, and you can pick the thing up and put it on a shelf and say, oh, look at the terrible rocket they sent over. And it's just, looks like a drain pipe. It's a glorified drain pipe with some fertilizer packed in the end of it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's ridiculous, you know?
I think some of it has to do with brainwashing the Israelis, the Israeli people themselves, to really believe that they're under attack and that they have to send to Palestine with love.
Well, yeah, the Jews have to feel like they're persecuted. They have to believe that everybody hates them. We have to be in a state of total defense all the time because everybody hates us. That's what they promote. We don't hate them. It's ridiculous. The Semitic Jews who lived in the Holy Land of Israel for thousands of years and got along with the Muslims for thousands of years, they were babysitting each other's kids as recently as 1946 until the Zionists come along and cooked up all this stuff. And let's not remember, there's a headline, a newspaper headline in 1914 where they're saying, please help us because 6 million of us are under threat in World War One. Right? And then there's a headline in 1918 where they're saying 6 million, they're holding a memorial service for the 6 million Jews who died in Russia in 1918. And then in 1921, they're saying, please help us because of the 6 million Jews that are in trouble in Russia. And then in 1939, they're saying, oh my God, there's 600,000 Jews that are being persecuted in Germany. And then at the end of the war, they said there's 6 million of us got killed in Germany. I mean, these numbers have been changing a lot. I mean, and if there was 600,000 of them in Germany at the beginning of World War II, they must breed like rabbits before there wouldn't have been 6 million of them at the end of World War II. And that 6 million figure, like I said, also came up in 1914, 1918, 1921, and 1939. So, come on, folks, what's going on here? You know, which Holocaust are we talking about?
I've heard of a baby boom, but not when you're in a concentration camp.
Well, I think what's also indicative of how screwed up the situation really is the fact that in many parts of the world, you can't even criticize Israel or talk about the Holocaust not being accurate the way that historians or mainstream historians are saying that it is. The 6 million number, for instance, that's called Holocaust denial, and you can actually go to jail in a lot of places of the world.
Yeah, apparently so. So it'll be interesting when I'm going to Europe.
No. I don't mean it like that. What I mean is just I think it's indicative of how much that they have. The fact that, I mean, people, you know, they can get countries to pass laws that say that if you talk this way, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, people say to me, do you question the Holocaust? And I say, well, it's not my field. I've never looked into it. But, I mean, obviously the figures are in question because there have been hundreds of books written questioning the figures. So I guess figures are in question, but I don't know. It's not my field. You know, I've never investigated.
No, I would say that it didn't happen the way that that he said it would happen. Not 6 million people, anyways. We took a look at some of the gas chambers, for instance, and there was a documentary, and they went over this. And just mathematically, you could not burn that many bodies, as many bodies as they claimed were burned in those gas chambers and in those ovens, because these ovens were meant to cremate dead bodies, and the dead bodies, you know, they weren't sticking the Jews in there alive and burning them, as a lot of people think. They were sticking the dead bodies in there, and one at a time. Well, you take the number, you take the time that this facility was open, and you start multiplying the number of supposed bodies that were burned in those little ovens. It's impossible. I mean, you know, just the time that it takes to burn the body, et cetera, the numbers just do not add up. But in the face of science, in the face of reason, in the face of everything else, you know, people still just close. It's like a child that puts the fingers in the ears and just goes, no, I can't hear you, I can't hear you, and just completely denying all evidence and reason.
Chris, well, because there were a lot of Jews persecuted, then there were a lot of Jews that were subject to exactly what is presented to you in Schindler's List. The question is, who did that? Was it Hitler or was it the Khazar, 100,000 Khazar Jews who were on Hitler's army and were on Hitler's payroll? Was it these people who were actually doing it? And I would suggest it was. But they had to do it. They had to do it to some people because they had to have people who remember the Holocaust. They have to have people with the stamps. They have to set the whole thing up perfectly. You know, so, you know, you've really got to look at how this was orchestrated, you know. So.
And you look at the public support that they had to garner back in the 1940s in order to get this rammed through the public opinion. And they really instituted a lot of Bernays' work when it came to brainwashing, especially Christian people, good Christians, you know, Southern Baptists or, you know, people like that to allow this to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, like, I mean, all this is interesting. It's all very interesting that this is how it's all happened. And all the information is there. I mean, Chris has looked at a lot of this stuff. And some of the stuff that he said earlier in the show is stuff that people really do need to look into about who is running all this. I mean, it's all there. All the information's out there in the public domain. You know, we're not making any of this stuff up. You can find out everything that we've said on the show today. But what we've got to look at now is we've got a serious situation here. And we're gonna do something about this. We've got a whole population being slaughtered before our very eyes in the Gaza Strip right now, and you know we're kind of discussing it. You know, we need to do something about this. We've got to find some way, some mechanism by which to reach large numbers of people and inform them of what's going on. We cannot allow this to happen. We can't just let these people be murdered in front of us. You know. And like I said, I want to get this delegation and go to Gaza if I can. I'm hoping that the fighting's going to stop soon, but I don't think it is. I think they're just going to keep going, and they're going to say that it's Hamas killing their own people, because I think they feel they can get away with it, you know?
Max, let me ask you this. I mean, let's say that we got 50 of us to go down there.
I wouldn't go down there with 50. I'd go down there with 1,000. I'd go down there with 2,000, 5,000, 10,000. I wouldn't go down there with any less than 1,000 people. Because you wouldn't have the media attention you need to be able to do it. I mean, I'd be concerned even going there with 1,000 people. I'm hoping there's many thousands of people who are concerned about this issue. I'm hoping everybody will hear about it. You know, I think we should go down there with as many people as possible, but I wouldn't go down there with, anywhere less than, you know, a large number, Chris. They wouldn't care. They just slaughter you anyway. They'd make sure the media didn't know about it. You have to have enough to make a real stir so that it's all over the mainstream media. Otherwise, it's you're walking into your own grave.
Very true. Very true. Chris, I know you posted quite a few notes here. Do you want to go over some of the information that you have ready?
Yes, absolutely. You know, for all of the Christians that are listening to this broadcast, I know that, like we said, with Cherie's family, there's a lot of Christians that follow Judaism. They think the rabbis are great dudes, you know, and they're great teachers, if you like. Some of these rabbis are actually political figures. They are not just religious leaders. A good example is this guy called Ovadia Yosef. Now, he died recently, but he was like the supremo of the Shas party. That's S-H-A-S. And you can look it up. This is an ultra-Orthodox Halakha political movement. Now, Halakha is the traditional Jewish name for the law. And this is religious law, political law. It's the law of Israel. And I just want to read what this guy said. He's a rabbi, remember, and he dresses up as a rabbi, but he's actually a politician. He said, as far as the 6 million people that we're seeing reported in the mainstream media over and over again, who are meant to have perished during the Third Reich. He said, the 6 million Holocaust victims were reincarnations of the souls of sinners.
I remember hearing that.
These were people who transgressed and did all sorts of things which should not have been done. They had been reincarnated in order to atone. And what he means by that is that they were sinners. They came back into the bodies of Jewish people, and they were murdered by the Third Reich, which, as I said before, was funded by the Saxe-Coburgs and the Bavarian Royal Sovereign Houses of Bavaria. And this rabbi, who is one of the major political movers and shakers, he died recently. His party, the Shas party, run the interior ministry of Israel. They are in charge of the Israeli so-called defense forces. And this guy is saying that the Jewish people that Hitler annihilated were sinners who'd been brought back into their bodies to atone. In other words, men, women, and children who had the boots of stormtroopers stuck in their faces and were stuck into mass graves were deliberately brought back onto our planet in order to suffer.
Right. I've heard this
is pretty sick stuff. If you really think it through, this is about as sick as it gets.
You know, what's most interesting about this information is just it gives you a glimpse into the psychopathy and the psyche of these people. And the justification of evil over and over and over again is being injected into people of the public, into Americans, into Europeans. And this is the same mentality that they use to justify what's going on.
Yep, absolutely. And the other thing I would have to say to all of the listeners who are African Americans or African or come from a non-white family background, there is a hate campaign that has been, sort of directed towards all of the African nations. It's no accident that Africa has got emeralds, diamonds, gold, oil, uranium, all of these valuable minerals, and yet people can't even afford to buy a pair of shoes. As I said earlier, De Beers is one of the biggest traditional Hebrew corporations and industries on the planet. This rabbi, his name is Ovadia Yosef. You can look this up. I'm not making this up. This is not a conspiracy theory. This guy really said this about the black people who were killed in Hurricane Katrina. Now, you would imagine, wouldn't you, that a rabbi, a religious leader, somebody with political clout would actually make a statement, you know, saying, oh, it's a terrible natural disaster. We feel very badly for all of those black families in New Orleans and all the areas that were affected by Hurricane Katrina. He doesn't say that at all. What he actually said, and this is a public sermon, this was his weekly public sermon broadcast on Israeli media. He said, there's been a tsunami, there's been hurricanes, there's been many terrible natural disasters. Why? Because there isn't enough study of the Halakha and the Torah. That's the Israeli books of law. He said, black people residing in New Orleans, do not study the Israeli Torah. He said, let's get God to bring another tsunami and drown them. Now, you know, if you have these kinds of people running the Interior Ministry, and his party does run the Interior Ministry of Israel, watch out. We have psychopathic, this is megalomania. This is the true definition of megalomania. When they say, we believe that we are the chosen people, it goes way beyond that. It's not only we are the chosen people, but everybody else is inferior, and God is on our side, and we want God to destroy them. This is what we're dealing with in black and white terms, and I'm quoting everything that I've just quoted. You can check it out. It comes from the Times of Israel newspaper. This guy really said those things.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I mean, we are in a serious situation, like Max says. This is really serious. This is as bad as the Third Reich master race, blonde hair, blue eyes. You know, we're back in that situation, which we all hoped ended 74 years ago.
Yes. I would say that this is worse, Chris. Max,
what's happening? That was the test run, you see. What happened in Nazi Germany was the test run, and now here it is. This is the global run, and they've started it this week, 10 days ago. They've started it, you know?
Yeah. So, and I'd just like to say for all of the just ordinary people who don't consider themselves to be particularly from a Christian family, and, you know, they've just grown up in the modern hydrocarbon society watching MTV. This is what this rabbi, Ovadia Yosef, says about ordinary people, just ordinary people, the billions of ordinary people. He says, the purpose of the Gentiles is that they are the goyim who were born only for one reason, and that is to serve us Jews. Without that, they have no place in the world. Only to serve the people of Israel. Now, I mean, I'm sorry, but people like this guy should not have a political office, most certainly should not be allowed to run a political party. And in the Egyptian People Power Revolution that happened in August last year, one of the new resolutions of the new Egyptian constitution is that political parties that have a religious leadership have been banned. Religious groups that then start a political party have been banned. And you know what? It's a good move, because you do not want people like this having any influence in any government cabinet, on any in any country on the face of the planet. Because if you do, you're going to end up with megalomaniacs and psychopaths in charge of these enormous defense budgets.
Well, that's exactly what
and
we
that have. Is what's happened.
Right. No, you're spot on that. We also have a situation to where most of our politicians have dual citizenship to Israel, and Israel comes first.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He also said, I have to say this for Arabic listeners, and I know there's a lot of Arabic readers of my pages on Facebook and visit also my websites. He said, on the subject of making peace with the Arabs, this is a rabbi. He says, how can you make peace with a snake? Those evildoers, the Arabs, it says in our text, the Gemara, which is actually a section of the Talmud, it says in the Gemara that God is sorry that he ever created those sons of Ishmael, which is obviously a reference to every single Arabic person, regardless whether they're even a Muslim or not, because the so-called sons of Ishmael, what happened is that they split into many, many different tribes, and many of them are not today Muslims. They're Druze, or, you know, they're different. They're Zoroastrians as well in Iran. This guy is saying, how can you make peace with a snake? What he means by that is that they've gone into all the different nations of the earth. He's basically saying there's no way that he's ever going to sit down at a table and have level-headed, peaceful negotiations with any Arabian person.
Right.
This is a recipe of global genocide. We're not talking about Gaza. We're not talking about Israel. We're talking about a global hate speech, a global plan of genocide. And I'm sorry to say this to the listeners, this has been going on for more than 1,000 years. It reared its head with the so-called Crusades in the 11th century. We are still suffering as the global population through a pact that was hatched by rabbis who I imagine are just as racist as this guy. And they did a pact, and they promised to give the secrets of the Kabbalah and the religion and the magical forces, if you like. I mean, we're talking about things that went on in the 11th century. They promised to give all these secrets to the French and British aristocracy, and in exchange, they would use the armies and the money and the taxes of all the normal people, the so-called Gentiles, to go over to the Holy Lands and commit genocide against Saladin and the Muslims. And that pact is what we're seeing today.
Chris, let me ask you about the flip side of the coin. And Max, feel free to jump in at any time. What about the Arab mentality? You know, we heard about Islam. We've been talking about it for the last two decades, and it's an evil religion, and they want to kill everybody. And would you say that the conflict between Islam and Judaism, at least on the surface, or the Arabs and the Jews, or however you want to look at it, would you say that it's looked at with such fervor from the Arabic side as well? I mean, do they have that mentality? We've got to kill all Jews. We've got to do this. Mm-hmm. And do that, because that's what the West believes.
Yeah, well, that is, again, it's a product of Her Majesty's intelligence community seeding the BBC, Reuters, and all of the other news agencies with nothing other than what I can describe as propaganda. The lines on the map, the lines on the map that divide, say, for example, Saudi Arabia to United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Iran, Iraq. Look at those lines. They're dead straight. They've been drawn with a ruler and a pen.
Yeah,
those nations never, ever existed. They were created by spies working for Her Majesty's intelligence services. Those people were nomadic Bedouin people. The so-called sheikhs, I mean, the word sheikh means an enlightened being, an enlightened kind of student of mysticism. They were Sufis, they were Bedouins, and the word sheikh, it actually comes from the Druze community. It means a leader who's, you know, fasted and he's actually, you know, devoted his entire life to studying scriptures and to, you know, following God. And that's what a sheikh is. People like Sidney Reilly, who was a MI5 spy who dressed as a Catholic priest. He was nothing to do with the Vatican. He dressed as a priest to fool the Bedouin tribespeople because they thought, oh, well, this guy's a priest. He must be trustworthy. He signed deals with those Bedouin people. He said, hey, he said, you know, you can come to London. You can send your children to Eton and Cambridge and Oxford will educate you. And you know what? You people are princes. You people are queens. And, you know, you could be ruling over this land. And all of these royal families in the so-called Arabian world have been manufactured by the European aristocrats. Their borders, even the names of their countries, have been created by European aristocrats.
That is 100%. That is 100% spot on, Chris. That is 100% spot on.
Lawrence of Arabia. Why is Lawrence of Arabia important? Because he was one of those guys. Lawrence of Arabia was one of those guys sent in by Buckingham Palace. Once their kids, and this is a very important thing, once the kids of those Bedouin tribespeople were sent to Eton, game, set, and match. Because they returned back to so-called Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, whatever. Those kids spoke English. They had English manners. They'd read Shakespeare. They'd been indoctrinated with, oh, Britain, the British Empire, these great people. And that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, they were indoctrinated into the hierarchical system. And then these countries were created to create the division in the Arab world. And then, of course, when we see Islamic extremism, the first books promoting Islamic extremism were printed in Pennsylvania University, and they were used to radicalize the Mujahideen in the war against Russia. So the whole Islamic extremist movement was created by the CIA, by Zbigniew Brzezinski, effectively.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, this whole thing has been manufactured, Chris. These were like a harmless, peaceful, Bedouin, wandering, nomadic people wandering around in the desert, just grooving, smoking hash and having a good time. And they went, well, we can use this. We can create a whole nation system here, divide all these people, get them all division, get them thinking hierarchy is real, train them into what we want, and manufacture the enemy that we need to bring about the domination that we want. That's what it's all about.
It is. And, a big part of this propaganda and indoctrination exercise has been done by these rabbis. I'm not talking about the rabbis in history. I'm talking about the rabbis today. And there are photographs of Tony Blair with Ovadia Yosef. I want to ask people, what on earth do they think that somebody like Tony Blair is doing meeting a man like Ovadia Yosef? I'll tell you another quote. This is from the Times of Israel. I'm not making this up. You can check it out yourself. He said, on the subject of Muslims, this is a man who meets Tony Blair, and there's photographs of them together. He said, on the subject of Muslims, I consider them, they're all stupid. Their religion is as ugly as they are. What is Tony Blair doing using British taxpayers' money, going off on, so-called diplomatic trips, meeting people like this? What is going on in the world?
It's all working together. I mean, this is all the same agenda. And as Max said earlier, the synagogue of Satan, you can't help but wonder if these people really are you know, the children of the supposed Satan. I personally don't believe in Satan myself. I think it's a force that's inside of each and every one of us. It's the reptilian mind. It's the hunter, the reptilian caveman mentality and his higher consciousness. We have to move away from that. But maybe there is a dark force. Maybe there is a dark entity that these people are working for. Max, your thoughts?
When I say the synagogue of Satan, what I use that as a reference to is if you look at the Bible, what the Bible tells you there is going to be this group of false people who pretend to be the sons of Israel who actually are not. Okay? It tells you this is going to happen in the Bible, in Revelation or whatever. And I'm just suggesting that if people who are devout, you know, Catholics or whatever, you're religious, when do you expect this to happen, folks? When you look at Israel now, and you see the damage that it's doing and the mayhem that it's meting out and the genocide it's carrying out against the Palestinian people, do you actually think this is the original, real God's chosen people? Do you think this is what Jesus would do to the Palestinian people? Wasn't Jesus born in Palestine? I mean, really, I mean, you look at this. This is what I'm just suggesting to them. I mean, I don't believe in Satan either. I'm just not into that sort of stuff. I don't go along with religion. It's just not who I am. But I can respect people's religious beliefs, but I'm just suggesting that if you are a religious person, and it does talk about this synagogue of Satan, these false people that are going to be in control of Israel, I would suggest that is what's happening right now. And the problem with the Bible is that it provides a script whereby people believe that, oh, that's okay then. It all has to happen this way because it says so in the book. And when it gets really bad, it doesn't matter because if I adhere to the book and I pray every night, then Superman's going to come and save me. Right. You know what I mean? That's unfortunately the mentality. I mean, I think we have to participate in this. If we want to change things, we have to participate ourselves. We can't wait for someone to come and save us. The problem that the Christians face is that they see all this happening and they go, oh, see, the Bible's right. It's all correct. It's all true because it said this had happened. They don't realize that it's a script that's been put there for these people to follow, and it's there so that everybody's just going to let it happen because they think it's a prediction. They don't understand it's a script.
It is very disturbing. It really is. And you're absolutely right. And a lot of people are sitting back in apathy and saying, well, all this must happen. It must happen. This is, you know,
yeah,
it's all,
well, that's the shame. That's the sad part about it. But Chris is absolutely right where he talks about how they divided the Arab world. This is what Lawrence Arabia was all about, all of these people. That's what they went and did. You know, the Arabs were peaceful people. And these Khazar Jews have infected everything, these Khazar converts. They're Jewish converts. They're not real Jews. The problem is that they converted to Judaism back in like 700 AD. And within two centuries, they had convinced themselves that they were actually the descendants of King David. They really seriously believed that they are the right Jews. That's the thing. It's very difficult to, you know, when you say these people are liars and all this and they're imposters, I mean, in their own minds, they're not. In their own minds, they actually believe that they are the original Jews. It's the same as the young Israelis that are educated, anybody who's under 60, honestly believes there was never a Palestine. It isn't that they're lying about it and hiding the truth. They honestly believe it. That's why it's so hard to talk to these people, because they seriously believe they are the descendants of King David and that there was never any ever a country called Palestine. And they think that the Palestinians, that these are these rogue Arabs that are trying to steal Israel. You see what I'm saying? The programming is very, very thick and very deep, and it's been so well orchestrated. These Khazars are very, very intelligent people. You know, all the Nobel Prize winners, Einstein, all these people, these are Khazar Jews, all of them. Very, very intelligent people. So it's an amazing plan that's in place here. But it's unfolding right now. This is the next step, what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. This is the most significant event that we've seen since 9/11. I really, really believe that. This is absolutely major. What's happening right now, and we have to pay attention because we're right on the front line now. This is a tipping point. I've been saying that for a long time. I've been calm and eloquently. I've been asking people to please wake up and to please pay attention for 7 long years on the radio show. And in the last couple of weeks, I've been screaming out from the rooftops in desperation. Now's the time. Please wake up now. You have to act now, you know, and I'm just hoping people will, you know.
Max, we've seen this conflict flare up and dim back down over the last, you know, 10 years at least. That's as long as I've been paying attention. And it's happened multiple times. I remember Hamas or Hezbollah and Israel got into it several years ago. But what do you think the possibility is that this time around it's another one of these situations where it's something that flares up and then dies back down? And it will start back up. I mean, no doubt about that. Or do you feel that this is it? This is the event. This is the World War III. This is the genocide. This is what we have been fearing the most. Not fearing, you know, out of fear of, you know, a negative emotion, but fearing is a sense of being wary of.
Well, this is when it becomes possible for them to do anything they want to do and get away with it, okay? I'm not saying the whole world's going to flare up into war. This is, if they can get away with what they're doing in Gaza now and get away with it, then any country in the world can get away with doing this to their population. All they got to do is call you a terrorist. All they got to do is say, look, there's a terrorist cell. Oh, no, the terrorists are using the local people in the neighborhood as human shields. Oh, no, they're killing the people rather than give up. It's so easy to play this out. It's so easy for a military force or a force of militarized police to go into any neighborhood, claim that the people in the neighborhood are terrorists who are standing up against the government. There's an armed conflict. Oh, my God, they've taken the neighbors hostage. Oh, my God, they're killing the whole neighborhood. It's so easy for them to do this. This is a test to see if they can get away with what they're doing. And it won't be like any other incursion they've done into Gaza. They're doing more damage with this incursion than all the other incursions into Gaza they've ever done. They've never destroyed the water system before. They've bombed the hospital. They've bombed all the ambulances. They've bombed all the water system. They've bombed the cemeteries. They've bombed the cafes. They've bombed the rescue teams. They're bulldozing all of the houses, driving tanks through. 60,000 troops and a whole line of tanks, a whole column of tanks going into Gaza. Not just one tank. This is against civilians. Hamas have these little pipe rockets. There's nothing you can do against a tank. They got a whole, basically a whole battalion going into Gaza of tanks, and they're just driving through people's houses. My friend Omar was cowering under the table. He said, I'm fine, Max, I'm okay, but there's tanks in town. They're targeting all the civilian houses, and they're just driving straight through them. So they're demolishing Gaza. They're just going in there and obliterating it. If they don't kill all the people, well, even the rich families have now run out of food. All the road systems are destroyed. The infrastructure's destroyed. Most of the traffic's destroyed. The cars, the buildings. How are these people going to get any food? They'll just close the door again. They'll go out, they'll close the door, and that's it. They're there. What are we going to do? How are you going to get food? Well, you've got a team of 65 people arriving from Malaysia. Yeah, they can bring a lot of food with them. That should feed the 1.8 million, which is probably, you know, be 1.2 million or 1 million by the time they finish. And all these people will die over the next couple of months if the world doesn't pay attention, but it'll be okay because they're only terrorists, you know. This is what's happening here. It's an absolute tragedy what's happening. And like I said, it's not going to just erupt into World War III. But if they can do this, if they can do this live on TV where the world cheers them on, what can't they do? What can't they do from this point forward? And we're going to see it get really, really ugly all around the world.
Well, NBC has reportedly ordered Ayman Mohyeldin, that guy that they pulled back from Gaza, they're letting him go back in after a great amount of outcry from their listeners.
Yeah, well, let's see if he survives because, I mean, that's the thing. They're targeting Western activists. I mean, it's very easy for Israel to just kill a reporter and say it was Hamas. They can do anything and say it was Hamas. Mm-hmm. Anything they want to do. They can go in there with absolute impunity. They can absolutely slaughter these people. They can use this dime ammunition to cut all these kids in half and do all this stuff and say it was Hamas. Hamas did it all with swords. They cut all these people in half. You know, they can just say anything they want. The media will go, oh, wow, it was Hamas. And all the people will go, oh, wow, look at all the terrible stuff Hamas did. Because the media doesn't lie, does it? You know, it's so easy for them to orchestrate anything they want with absolute impunity. You know, what scares me, what really chills me to my soul is knowing how much these people want peace and how beautiful these people are and how much the Israeli military hates them, how much it absolutely hates them and how it treats them. The way it treated Zanad Samouni and the way it treated her family, that's just one family. They didn't have these type of dime munitions back then. They didn't have some of the new fancy artillery they've got now. And just think, these soldiers hate Palestinians, and the new artillery and the new dime ammunition is pretty cool, isn't it? You know, it'd be good fun. Best video game in town, you know? So that's what chills me to the bone, just how much they can get away with while they're in there and how much glee they take in exacting this type of torture on the Palestinian people. They love it. And that's what really, really scares me about my friends that are in there. That's what really upsets me. That's why I've been so scattered lately. I haven't slept in 10 days. I've hardly slept at all. People have seen a side of me that I've never shown to the world because I'm in absolute horror at the apathy of this planet, and I am in such empathy for my friends who are caught in an absolute living hell, and they have absolutely nowhere to run. If they run far enough, all they can get is a wall or an ocean. That's it. You're just trapped in a box, and there's nowhere to go, nowhere to hide, and there is no safe place. That's what upsets me. That's what I feel every day, and that's what they feel every day. And that's what people aren't understanding in this situation. They just think, oh, the terrorists, go kill the terrorists. And it's shocking. It's truly shocking, Chris. It's really shocking, Cherie. It's horrible. It really upsets me. It really does, because I feel these people. I feel the energy of these people, and I've met them. I've sat down with them. I've broken fast with them. I've laughed with them. I've danced with them. I've cried with them. And it's just not fair. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just been on my mind. I can't think about anything else. I just can't think about anything else. I can't focus. I've been completely out of touch with anything else that's been going on in the world. I'm just locked into this issue. And, I hope it ends soon. I really hope that I'm wrong. I really hope they pull back. Now, I know they will eventually, and there will be people that are left alive. We're not going to see everybody dead. But the state of the place, when they leave, I don't know how long they're going to survive. As soon as it's clear, as soon as there's a ceasefire, as soon as it's peaceful, I'm going straight in there. Wherever I happen to be in Europe, I'm going to go straight into Gaza Strip and do what I can to help the people that are in there.
Let me ask you this, Max. Last time a conflict like this flared up, I seem to remember one of the leaders of Hamas driving to actually sign a peace treaty with Israel, and Israel blew up his car on national TV and played the video over and over and over again. Do you remember that situation? And if so, can you tell the audience who may not be familiar with it?
Well, yeah, he was the most moderate member of Hamas. He was the most peaceful member of Hamas. He was the minister for something or other, I can't remember. But he was the one brokering the peace deal. He wanted to organize a truce so that things could just stop. They would stop shooting each other. And Hamas had all agreed to it, and Israel sort of begrudgingly agreed to it. But then, they just blew his car up on the way to the meeting and said, oh, we took out a terrorist. He was a militant. He was the head of Hamas' military wing. And he was. He was the head of their military wing, and he was the most moderate Hamas member and the one who was broken the peace deal. They forgot to mention those two bits. But, yeah, and that was in a small flare-up. You know, there was a small flare-up after I was there in 2012, about a month after I was there. It was just a small flare-up. Went for a few days. That was the last sort of a kind of a flare-up that they had. The major one before that was 2008-2009, which was Cast Lead, in which 1,300 Palestinians were killed compared to the 13 Israelis, so that's 100-1. We've seen a bit better odds for the Israelis with this one. But the death toll now is about 280 or something. Well, that's the last we heard. And, of course, one Israeli has been killed. And, of course, Israel is acting in self-defense. That's what we're told, you know. 1-280. Yeah, 280-1, that's self-defense for you. God's chosen.
And there's what, about 8 million people in Israel, maybe around 7 million?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the population of Israel is. I couldn't tell you that. But
I'm just trying to put things in perspective. You mentioned...
Yeah, well, there's a lot more people in Israel than there is in Gaza Strip. You know, 1.8 right. million people in Gaza Strip. Well, probably 1.75 million people in Gaza Strip now, maybe less, and dwindling as we speak. And, yeah, maybe about 8 million, 7 or 8 million in Israel. So, yeah, so the percentage of people is incredible. I mean, there isn't one family in Gaza Strip that doesn't have a martyr in their family. And it's interesting that they use the word martyr as well, okay? Every person that they kill gives the Palestinians another reason to keep fighting. That's the thing, you know. That's a lot of the reason why Israel does it. Just random kills, random shots, you know. They blew up a friend of mine while he was driving down the street the other day. Oh, he's a terrorist. He wasn't a terrorist. He was just a guy. He was a friend of Omar's. You know, he was just driving down the Esplanade with some guy in the car with him. And hit a missile hit his car. Bang, gone. Just obliterated him in a split second. You know, just random shot. That'll give the Palestinians a bit of a thrill for the day, you know. And it's a martyr. Everyone who dies is a martyr. Even when they put up their list of dead for the day, the martyrs of this day. Because it gives you a reason to fight. These people died, so you better keep fighting. That's right. What Israel does it, because they know this is the mentality of the people. So the more people they kill, the more terrorists they create, the more they continue the conflict, you know. The more people they kill, the harder it is for the Palestinians to ever want to have peace with them, because every single person in Gaza Strip has got a member of their family who has been killed or brutalized or imprisoned by an Israeli soldier. That's the way they want it.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I was trying to explain to some of these people, and the words that I was using were yours, that these people grow up and they see their friends die, and then their brothers die, and their sisters die, and, you know, it just gets worse and worse and worse until they have nothing left anymore, and they turn around.
And they don't feel anymore. They're numb. They don't cry after you kill the fourth or fifth relative in front of them and blow up the fourth or fifth relative next to them. They don't cry anymore. They don't feel anything anymore. And personally, I think after what we have done, what Western society, Western civilization and Israel has done to the Arab world and what they have done to the Palestinian people, I think the Arab world and the Palestinian people has showed the most incredible restraint you could ever ask from any person on earth after what the West has done to these people. It's been brutal, and I have to take my hat off to them and respect them for the restraint that they've shown in the face of this psychopathic behavior from our leaders.
Totally agree. Chris, anything you'd like to chime in on?
I just like to sort of say about this ancient kind of term that we know as the synagogue of Satan. A lot of people say that there is no Satan in Judaism, but there is. There is. The actual serpent from a place called Gan Eden, that's the serpent in the Garden of Eden, that is actually worshipped amongst ancient Judaic sects. And it's an important point, because this is an idea that has come right the way up to the modern era. And you can actually see the Hebrew word for Satan is Shin Tet Fenel. Shin Tet Fenel. That is the Satan who tempts people off the path of goodness. And yes, I'm sorry to say this, there are modern groups in the most recent era. We've had the Church of Satan. The guy there, Anton Sandoz LaVey, that's a fake name. He was born Howard Levy, and he comes from a Jewish Hebrew family. And he formed the Church of Satan, and there is a photograph of him with a snake. And the reason that he went to all the trouble of having a photograph of himself with a snake is because the snake represents this secret force, the secret spiritual entity of temptation that is actually worshipped in some of these ancient Judaic sects. And Satanism itself, it is, you know, it's forbidden. You know, the actual official Hebrew books of law, which is called the Halakha, says, you know, you must never, ever, you know, sort of worship the tempter. But unfortunately, yeah, you know, we can clearly see that there have been people from Hebrew families and Jewish families who've actually walked the path of worshipping the tempter. And it makes me wonder, with all of this death and destruction and the spin and the propaganda and, you know, this heartless and cruel annihilation and genocide that we see before us, it really makes me wonder whether the politicians, especially those that have the dual citizenship between, say, the USA and Israel, It makes me wonder whether these guys have done some kind of pact. I mean, this does go on. We know it goes on. It makes me wonder whether these guys have done some kind of secret deal and that they are doing the bidding of the so-called Great Tempter, the Shin Tet Fanal, which is mentioned in some of these ancient Hebrew texts. I mean, for me, when I look at all these historical subjects, I mean, it's the only thing that makes any sense. Why do we have organizations like the Church of Satan? Why do people like Sammy Davis Jr., who was a Jew by choice, by the way, join the Church of Satan, have his fingernail tattooed scarlet red to show that he's a member of this organization that worships the tempter, the person that turns purity and goodness into evil? I mean, we've got to sort of mention these things because, as far as I see it, it's the independent media's job to open up this debate, because you sure as hell ain't going to see any debate on these types of subjects on the mainstream media. All we have is we have propaganda and spin with no explanation and no cross-referencing of all of these geopolitical events. There's no investigation into the backgrounds of these politicians, the rabbis, and all the movers and shakers on the geopolitical scene. We know that they're secret societies. We know that Freemasonry, for example, conducts its rituals in Hebrew. And at the upper levels, it's rather like learning a second language. When you have to learn those advanced degree rituals of Freemasonry, you're basically speaking Hebrew. Why? We have to open up the debate on this. We've got to get this information out to people and show people that there is a backstory. There is some kind of influential, weird, strange, possibly demonic and satanic agenda which is being followed, and that is resulting in the genocide that you're seeing on your TV screens.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I mean, we can take this broadcast into a very, very esoteric realm. I don't know if Max wants to do that or not, but you know, I personally believe that these people are worshiping what, you know, fallen angels, you know, if you want to stick with the religious terminology, or extraterrestrials. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And these are old ideologies that have been passed down from these extraterrestrials that landed at one point in time, manipulated us, manipulated our DNA, manipulated our religious structure, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And there's a very dark force that these people are following.
Absolutely. I mean, sorry, I just want to say on that point, if the listeners think that what you've just said is crazy, then I suggest they do a little bit of research on Scientology, because the main movers and shakers of Scientology before they became Scientologists were all Jewish. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about really L. Ron Hubbard and the founders of Scientology. Many of these people come from Hebrew family background. I mean, this isn't a conspiracy theory. You can just look this up yourself. Many of the corporations that actually funded L. Ron Hubbard and his research and his sci-fi stories, which were then transformed into Dianetics, and then Dianetics was transformed into Scientology, which we now see a huge part of the Hollywood community, you know, describing themselves and members of their family as Scientologists. This has its roots in these strange, weird legends that come from the so-called Holy Lands, where you've got, you know, spiritual entities, you've got star gods. I mean, that is basically what we see at the Library of Nineveh in the north of Iraq. Now, Iraq was where there was a huge, massive pre-Judaic community, and they were called the Chaldeans. And the Chaldeans traveled from Iraq, and they formed, you know, a community in what we today call Israel. So these things are all interconnected. You know, Scientology, Hollywood, manipulation of the media, propaganda, seeding this type of information into the scripts of mainstream Hollywood movies. This is all going on. It's not a conspiracy theory. You only have to look at a new movie, I, Frankenstein. You can see these weird, they're dressed in business suits, they're weird characters in that movie. They're like kind of reptilian, amphibian humanoids. That is what the ancient gods were to these ancient so-called tribes of Israel. They worshipped amphibian, reptilian, humanoid gods. I've just written a book about them. They're called the Ogdoad, and there were eight of them. And all of these ideas of teachers coming from the stars, many people do not realize that the Hebrew alphabet, the actual letters, are based and inspired by the shapes of star constellations. It is a magical system. It's not just an alphabet. All of this is interlinked into today's geopolitical situation. These people that are committing genocide are members of these brotherhoods. And that, I have to say this, I'm not making this up. It's very easy to actually confirm what I'm telling you. There are lists actually published from Ivy League fraternity brotherhoods like the Scroll and Key, the Book and Snake, which, by the way, the Bush family are also members of the Scroll and Key. It's hardly ever mentioned. The Scroll and Key were founded as a brotherhood and a sisterhood, actually, because they actually accept female members, almost as long ago as the so-called Skull and Bones. These families are handing this political power down from one generation to another, and they are funding with not millions, billions of dollars, the genocide of the Palestinians. And they are all members of these secret brotherhoods. And yes, they do believe this weird stuff. When you first read what Scientologists believe, you think, wow, it's like science fiction. But then when you look under the layers a little bit deeper, you realize, hey, hang on a minute. People coming from the stars and all these kinds of things that Hubbard was writing about, hey, this actually comes from the ancient kind of tribes of Israel. It comes from the Library of Nineveh in Iraq. And all of these things, I'm including the genocide of the Palestinians right now, these things are interrelated. You must make the effort to actually soak up this information. It's all there for people. And then, finally, you turn on the BBC, and all of this filth and this propaganda, this mind control, the twists, the turns, the spins, the cover-ups, the whitewashing, all of a sudden makes sense. You realize, this is nothing more than a spin game, and this is real genocide by megalomaniacs and psychopaths.
It is. It's interesting with the Minerva connection as well. I'm glad you mentioned Minerva because that's a bit of disinformation that Alex Jones has put out, whether he knows it or not. But he keeps saying that the owl in Bohemian Grove is the owl is Moloch. It's not. It's the owl of Minerva. That relates back to exactly
absolutely
what
absolutely right. Moloch. That's right. Moloch is a horned humanoid bull god.
Yeah, the Owl of Minerva symbolizes exactly the cult and the secret societies that Chris was just talking about. That's exactly what is going on in Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, and if we look at one of the most notorious brotherhoods of all time from the 1700s, it was run by a guy who used to call himself Spartacus. Now, his real name was Adam Weishaupt, and he was a Jewish Catholic. Now, I know that sounds weird. I know that sounds strange. A lot of people don't realize that there are actually Hebrew Roman Catholic people. I know that sounds weird. Look it up.
Here's another interesting...
He was a specialist in canon law, which is the laws laid down by the popes of the Vatican. They have their own country, Vatican City. They have their own law system. The word jury, judicial, comes from Jew. They have the same link. They laid down the laws by which everyone else on the planet is judged. And that was his speciality. And he called himself Spartacus. He actually initiated... Catherine the Great, the Empress of Russia, was a member of the Bavarian Illuminati.
Yeah, it's all interconnected.
These people have massive political power and wealth beyond what you can even imagine.
Going back to the origin of the Jewish faith and all that sort of stuff, to get esoteric and to start talking about demons and off-world entities and stuff that I don't usually talk about, the Gnostic perspective is quite interesting on all of that sort of stuff, because if you really look at the Gnostic tale of creation and the Gnostic perspective and the concept of the Archons, and I'm not sort of talking about reptilians and anything that what Dave may have made out of it, Dave Icke, but if you look at the Gnostic concept of the Archons, they said that there was a head Archon whose name was Yaldabaoth. And Yaldabaoth had two other names that he used to use. One was Yahweh and one was Jehovah. And this Yaldabaoth is who made the pact with Abraham and promised Abraham the land of Israel. By promising Abraham the land of Israel, he effectively dispossessed Abraham of his heritage, which is the earth, because you can't own the earth. You can't own any part of the earth. The earth owns you. You're only here for a little while. The concept that you can own a piece of the earth is completely and utterly ridiculous. You can't. It's the earth, for God's sake. So he tricked Abraham into thinking he could actually own part of the earth, effectively dispossessing him of his true heritage. And then the descendants of Abraham went out and effectively dispossessed everybody else. So when you talk about the current cult, the Judaic cult, the Khazar cult that is currently in control of Israel, saying they are God's chosen people, it may very well be that they are. It's just that the God they are referring to is Yahweh, who is actually Yaldabaoth, the head Archon, who is an insane alien who does not have humankind's best interests at heart and actually wants to destroy everybody. That's, of course, the Gnostics.
That's right.
That is why the Gnostic teachings, whenever the Gnostics rise, they get wiped out quicker than anybody. You know, and they even try to tell you now that they're Gnostic Christians. No, Gnostics weren't Christians. Gnostics were diametrically opposed to Christianity. They tried to say, look, you've got it all wrong. This Redeemer complex doesn't work. And by the way, this God you're worshipping is an insane alien and you need to think about this. They didn't go down very well with the Christians, so they stomped them right out as quickly as they could. That's an interesting perspective to look at.
It is. It is. And also these concepts of this, the so-called Yahweh is described in the Nag Hammadi codices. These were discovered,
The Nag Hammadi library.
That's right. They were just so happened to be discovered within about 12 months of the establishment of the modern state of Israel.
Yeah.
And Nag Hammadi is a place in Egypt. It's not far from where the Nile is. It's about halfway up between what you call Upper and Lower Egypt. Mm. And the Nag Hammadi described this chief Archon as being a serpent with a lion's head. And that is fascinating. What that is, of course, is a symbolic representation.
The British coat of arms.
Yeah, I mean, we have this lion's head on all of the coins of the British realm.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's in front of your face.
The British coat of arms has got so many clues on it as to what's going on. It's absolutely phenomenal. I remember including a picture of it in my first film, The Big Picture. They tell you right there on the coat of arms who, what's going on, where all their clubs are, who they're related to, where they come from, and what they're doing. It's right there on the coat of arms.
And I'm glad we brought this up because it brings the show back full circle to what I first said, and that is that Buckingham Palace have had an amazing influential position in creating the genocide which we see today. The genocide of those Palestinian people is going on right now. I'm laying the responsibility of those deaths on Buckingham Palace's doorstep. It's they and Her Majesty's government, or His Majesty's government, back at the time of the Balfour Declaration or the Balfour Treaty. It was a deal done by the British government and Baron Rothschild to impose a state of Israel on that geopolitical area. And I can tell you now, there is several new plans that have come along since the 1940s and since the 1950s. One of them is called the Greater Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, I have to say this to the listeners, if they start following that plan, we are going to be in even deeper, we're going to have much more serious problems. We're not going to only see genocide of the Palestinians. We're also going to see the Lebanese people. We're going to see the Syrian people, the entire Arab world, Chris.
The entire Arab world.
That's right. That's right. They are all going to come under immense pressure. And one of the things that's happening right now is that we're seeing oil production in the hands of all of the companies. I'll read them out. Royal Dutch Shell, British Petroleum. Just these two companies are responsible for extracting about 85% of the oil from those Arabian nations that were created by spies like Sidney Reilly, Lawrence of Arabia, by the Foreign Office in London. The entire Iran-Iraq war was run, funded, and they were given weapons which were even manufactured and funded from London.
Exactly. And
Let's get this right.
The entire situation in Iran was created by British Petroleum. The whole concept, I mean, Iran was a democratic nation back in 1954, and they had a coup because Mossadegh wanted to nationalize the oil fields. He thought, well, hang on, maybe Iran should benefit from the Iranian oil instead of England. And England said, we can't have that. So the CIA the Americans said, look, hang on, we'll go and fix it for you. Just give us half the oil. England said, not a problem. As long as the Iranians don't have it, how dare they want their oil? So the CIA went in, undermined Mossadegh, imposed the Shah, who was a brutal dictator. Yeah. The Shah was a brutal dictator who had the secret police who were trained by the CIA. And there is not one family in Iran that does not have a relative or a cousin or someone who was tortured by the CIA or by the Iranian secret police. And so that paved the way for Ayatollah Khomeini to come back and turn the whole place into an Islamic state. The whole thing was a setup. Right from the very beginning, it was all done by so that England could keep its oil. That's what it was all about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say to the listeners, they need to look very carefully at this entire situation, because when the Iranian people woke up and they realized, hey, there's secret police dragging us from our beds early at dawn, we're being tortured, our kneecaps are being drilled out, our children are disappearing, there's people being shot in the head, there's people being poisoned by the secret police all working for the Shah. When the Iranian people woke up to this and they had an uprising, what did they do? They then installed the Ayatollah Khomeini, and the Ayatollah Khomeini's father is an executive of Royal Dutch Shell. He actually comes from the west of England, and he was shipped in on a plane, and he'd lived in Paris in France. I'm talking about the Ayatollah Khomeini.
And it was a fundamental
Muslim guy living in Paris, and he was shipped in, and a plane flying in the opposite direction shipped the Shah out. And where did he go? He went to Paris. The whole thing is a sham.
Absolutely, and it paved the way, the Ayatollah Khomeini, then it paved the way for him to say, this all happened because you converted from Islam. You left the path of Islam, so you've got to become devout Islamists. And this was the beginning of this whole extremist movement, which was all puppeteered and orchestrated. The whole thing has been a setup right from the very beginning. And like you said, they probably even went to the same unit. They probably just changed the lease over on the unit from Ayatollah Khomeini's name and gave it to the Shah. He probably moved into the same bloody building. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing I'd like to say to the listeners, because it's very easy to forget this, opium is just as an important crop, is just as an important international market to the elite as crude oil.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, we had a situation where the Russians had overstepped the mark, and they'd gone into Afghanistan to try and actually take over the province of Helmand, which is the world's biggest opium production geopolitical area. And what happened is that this guy called Tim Osman, that was his agency name, from the family of bin Laden, who'd actually been contractors. They were construction contractors, and the bin Laden family had contracts with the Pentagon to actually build military bases in the Middle East, and this isn't again, it's not a conspiracy theory. This the Bin Laden family.
The Bin Laden construction group still does, Chris. They still do a lot of the work for the American government all through Iraq. A lot of the American bases that are being built in Iraq now are being built by the Bin Laden construction company. It's the same people still.
That's it. And Tim Osman was the agent's name, a fake operative name, which is a very common thing when spies go in on an operation. Obviously, they never use their real names. Tim Osman was the cover name for Osama bin Laden. He was funded. He was trained. Not only him, but, I mean, he had recruitment budgets given to him from London, from the SIS, the Pakistani Secret Intelligence Service, and by the CIA. And this is all in the public domain. All you need to do is just type into any search engine, Freedom of Information Act, Tim Osman, Osama bin Laden, SIS Pakistan, and it'll all be there for you. And you can read through those documents. And what we've seen is that there's various Freedom of Information Acts in various countries. I mean, Finland, Sweden, France has even started a mini ministry to actually open up its documents to the public. There's lots of countries that were involved in that whole operation. And because they have copies of the CIA memos and the MI6 communiques, you can actually read those, say, for example, by going to the Swedish archives, going to the French archives, go to the Spanish archives. That's how this information has actually got out there into the public domain. Everything that we're seeing with this genocide, everything we're seeing with Mossad, everything we're seeing with MI6, MI5, it's all interrelated into making money for the elite through major industries. First of all, crude oil. Secondly, heroin. Now, heroin, yes, is a street drug, but it's also used in pharmaceuticals. I also believe, and I've been doing research on it, that there are molecules being extracted from the raw opium gum, and I believe that this is why certain supermarket foods seem to have a kind of addictive quality to them. It also seems to me that some pet foods, commercial pet foods, your pets can't stop eating them. There is something suspicious going on with commercially produced foods. I'm not really quite sure about it. I've only just started the research on it. It's a line of research and study which I'm going to do now. Diamonds, another big industry. As I said, diamonds themselves are not being mined out of the ground because they're shiny stones. They're being mined out of the ground because they are a money laundering instrument. All right. And people need to bear these things in mind. You know, their God, G-O-D, is gold, it's oil, it's diamonds, or gold, opium and diamonds. I mean, this is really what they're into. That's the true Illuminati. What we're really discussing here is the elite. We're talking about black markets in things like diamonds, emerald, sapphire, uranium. This is a new cash crop, if you like, of the elite, is uranium. And this so-called depleted uranium is actually plutonium. People need to realize, they need to just do a little bit of research, and they can see that plutonium is the most toxic substance in the world, and it's being labeled depleted uranium. And yes, pounds of plutonium dust left into the atmosphere would kill all living creatures on planet Earth. And they have this disgusting DU armaments industry where the tips of bullets, the tips of missiles, tank grenades and ordinary hand grenades and even landmines are tainted with this poisonous stuff. It's even named after the ancient god of war. And this is all going on in Palestine right now.
Yeah, and what people don't understand about depleted uranium is it's a weapon of mass destruction. It goes on killing indiscriminately for billions of years after it's used. And this is how America gets rid of a lot of its nuclear waste. It makes it into weapons and it drops it in other countries and shoots it at people. That's not, you know, this is not the act of a sane mind. People need to consider this sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, this goes really, really deep. And to the blood diamonds or to the diamonds, I've heard people talk about how there's actually places in Africa, and I think in parts of Europe as well, where it's completely militarized. You cannot get in here at all. And you just walk around and you find these huge diamonds just laying on the ground. They're not even dug out of the earth. They're just picked up literally right off the ground.
Diamonds aren't a rare jewel. They're not a rare gemstone at all. Diamonds are one of the most common stones on the earth. The price of diamonds is controlled by controlling the flow of diamonds. That's pure and simple.
Right, right.
Diamonds are very, very common.
Now,
the only reason they're worth money, it's just the whole, you know, diamonds are forever, the whole advertising thing. You've got to have a big rock on your hand, you know, these super hard things. Nothing can pretend it's a diamond because you know it isn't as hard as a diamond. So you know it's genuine, you know. So you can, you know, it's okay, I know it's a rare thing because of what we say it is. That's it. They're not rare at all. It's completely and utterly contrived, you know.
Right, right. And now back to the gold thing. If you look at Sitchin, we were created, genetically engineered to mine gold, to basically dig into the planet Earth, destroy the planet Earth, and pull as many resources out as possible. Now, when you consider that, it's not really surprising that that's still what we're doing to this day.
Yeah, look, you know, I don't know about the whole Sitchin thing, the whole Anunnaki thing. I used to really consider that to be a possibility. But I really wonder about it now. I mean, when you look at the Anunnaki information, it's very disempowering. You're built as a slave race. You can't escape. There's nothing you can do. You've been genetically dumbed down, so forget it. And I look at where the information came from. The information came from Sumer. Came from thousands and thousands of stone tablets that were lying around in what is present-day Iraq, in the ancient civilization of Sumer. Okay, there were tens of thousands of these tablets, and a very, very small percentage of them had what was translated as the Anunnaki information on it. You know what I mean? Do you know what the rest of the tablets had on them? Do you know what they were mainly concerned with in this civilization?
I don't know, but I know that there are hundreds of thousands.
Accounting. It was bills. It was an economic system. These guys invented banking. The Sumerian civilization was kind of like the Goldman Sachs of the ancient world. This is not a good source of information for spiritual and creation stories. You know what I'm saying?
I
wonder about that. I wonder very, very much about it. I keep it there, okay, it's a possibility. But when I look at things like the Gnostic teachings and some of the other stuff, so even some of the research that Chris has gone through with you today, I have to question. The whole Sitchin concept, and I have to question the validity of information that comes from what is essentially a banking community. You know what I mean?
See, I disagree with the way that the texts read, and the way that I see it, and what I've taken from the text is that yes, we were created as slaves. We were created as slaves to mine gold, but at one point in time, we were given a higher consciousness. We were given more of the DNA of the gods, a lowercase g, of course, not the big god. Inside of their own writings, it talks about the creator of all. And so if they're concerned with the creator of all, then they're basically admitting we're not really gods. We just came down here and posed as gods. I mean, if you read the Lost Book of Anki, that's exactly what it says. But what I took out of it is that we were created as slaves. That's why we've been enslaved. That's why we live in servitude our entire lives and throughout all these generations. But it's the knowledge of being enslaved that allows us to free ourselves. And the knowledge that we know, that the Sumerian tablets say, that we've been given the knowledge to be able to free ourselves. Now we're able to see the bars in front of us. Now we can break the chains because we can at least see that they're there. But I've always seen it as a sense of empowerment. And then it makes so much sense when you apply it to religion and you apply it to all these rivalries and these conflicts that have been arising. You know, it's different sects of extraterrestrials who are controlling the Arabs, who are controlling the Muslims, who are controlling the Jews, et cetera, et cetera. And they have all been fighting with each other ever since the beginning of time. And then when you really look at the tablets, too, it says that they created separate tribes in order to keep them at war, in order to control them. It also says that they created alcohol and several other things as a control mechanism. And so we can see, you know, it's like a blueprint of the gods, lowercase g again, but a blueprint of the gods of how they've controlled us, how the power structure is controlling us now, and how they continue to control us unless we just wake up and say, you know what, I'm stepping stepping out of this completely. I'm not going to fall into this trap of religion. I'm not going to say that I'm a Christian and so I'm waiting for Jesus to come back. So I support the genocide in Palestine because that's God's chosen people, and the God's chosen people can do whatever the hell they want. You realize that this God that they're worshiping is just some physical being, some extraterrestrial. It's so empowering to me. You know, I've taken the complete opposite out of the text.
Well, I don't know, like, there's stuff in there. I can agree with a lot of what you're saying. I mean, the best place to hide, disinformation is in real information, you know. I think they're telling you a lot of the story, but they're not giving you the whole story. I think there's more to it than that. You know what I mean? I think they've left crucial bits out. And I think this is the way they do it. I mean, even with the stories that you get now, some of the conspiracy theories that you see out there, a lot of these are really true. But they leave crucial information out, or they embellish it with stuff which makes it unbelievable. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think there's a lot of truth in it, but there's a lot of disinformation in it as well. And I simply don't trust the source. I don't trust the source. This is the Goldman Sachs of the ancient world. Why are they giving us creation stories? Why are they giving us all this stuff? What's the counterplot? What does it lead to? What have we got from it? You know what I mean?
Well, you know where I think a lot of the real answers lie is in the Kabbalah and in a lot of these hidden occult
teachings. The Kabbalah is a very, very important book. The Kabbalah is how the whole control grid works. And the Kabbalah is like a mathematical program. I believe that the monetary system is even based on Kabbalistic principles.
Yes.
This is a full energetic program. The Kabbalah is basically a series of spells of how to manipulate reality if you know how to use it, you know. That's what I completely agree with you.
We have to look at what they believe of you know, their secret mystical teachings. Because obviously, I mean, they put out the Bible, and the Bible is complete disinformation, in my opinion. It's completely warped. But
there's two stories in the Bible, or even three stories in the Bible. There's one on the surface, and there's one beneath the surface. But listen, we've been on for nearly 3 hours now, and I think Chris and I have both got things to do. So I'm thinking we probably should wrap it up in a few minutes. So how are you feeling about that? I thought I'd put that out there.
Absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing as
I've like, really enjoyed the show. I have to say it's one of the best broadcasts I've been a member of. It's just great information all the way through this show, and I've learned a hell of a lot listening to you guys.
It's been really good, yeah, it has. Same to you, Chris. I enjoy doing shows with you, and it's great when we get to just have a round table like this and just put it all together and butt in with each other and, oh, yes, but, and, oh, yeah, and remember that. It's great. I love it. So it's been good. Very, very enjoyable. Got my mind off things a little bit, so thank you for that, everybody.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us, too. Yeah. Dr. Waterman actually just joined us. I don't know if you've had a chance to tune into anything that we've been talking about, Doc, but I know that you were on with Kev Baker and Popeye and everybody for the last, I don't know, 5 hours or something like that, just tearing into the Israel situation and the Palestine situation. But anything you'd like to comment on? And by the way, welcome to the broadcast. This is Max Egan and Christopher Everard, two dear friends of mine. Chris is another host on the network, by the way.
Hi, Max, and hi, Christopher and Chris.
Nice to meet you, brother.
Yeah, I don't have a clue what you've been talking to. I had to take a break and do some work, but I'm here, and gosh, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I have been digesting a WebBot report that I'm going to be covering, and whoa, boy, it's pretty heavy.
Fantastic. Let me stop you right there. I want to get into that here in just a moment. I think Max said that he alluded to the idea that he needed to go. We've been on for about 3 hours now. So, Max, if you need to take off, you know, we just want to say thank you very much for your time and all the information that you've shared with us.
Thank you, guys. No problem. I will. I'll just mute my mic and I'll stay and listen for a little while, but I've got to go and do a few things. But I'll have to sign out of the show now. I'll just drop offline when I have to.
Okay, fantastic.
We love you, Max.
Yeah, we love you, definitely. We're with you, and, I mean, hell, I'd be right there with you if you rallied enough people to go to Palestine. So
I really do want to do it. If we can get a few thousand people, I'd love to go there right now and do a human shield operation right now if people are into it. But if not, then I won't be able to. But whatever happens, as soon as hostilities have stopped, as soon as there's a ceasefire, I'll be going straight in there. So if anybody wants to come with me, that would be wonderful. We need all the help we can get. It's been wonderful to do a show with you, Chris. We'll have to do one together again soon.
Absolutely. I'll send you the archive as soon as it's posted.
That was to Chris Everard. You too, Chris Geo, but that was directed at Chris Everard.
Too many Chris's.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Chris, do you have time to stick around a little bit?
Well, I'm actually planting trees, and it's something which I've been doing for quite a long time now. And I have to go off and see a lady to print. I'm going to be planting citrus trees, and we're looking for wine kind of vines as well. Unfortunately, it's one of those things I can't wriggle out of because, you know, she's a nice lady, and she's also got herbs and things that she's lined up for us. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave the broadcast, but I'm very willing to join another broadcast later on today. And you guys are fantastic for putting this network together.
We couldn't do it without everybody around us. I mean, we only built it. But I knew at the beginning when I was going through all the trials and tribulations of building it, the voice kept going through my head, if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, there you go.
And we're surrounded by all these wonderful people. So thank you very much, Chris.
Well, I very much enjoyed it. I mean, I've learned a lot. I mean, what Cherie was saying especially – and, you know, it's always a pleasure doing a show with Max because he's a bit of a golden nugget there, actually.
He's
a great.
Yeah. Him and along with people like Michael Tellinger and, you know, everybody, McKenna, everybody that comes on our show that, you know, likes to wax philosophical, but it's in a good way. You know, it's
absolutely
really a great addition to the show.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay. It's a pleasure. Take care.